Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Begins anew. I'm Bob. You are wonderful, you. And, you know, let's just get this done real quick. I don't think I have ever enjoyed a Super Bowl so much in my entire life as I enjoyed that one last night. It just had everything, including the little emotional roller coaster ride early in the game where you were thinking, I don't know if the Saints can do this. That's right. I had a dark night of the soul. I lost faith. Well, me lose faith. Yeah. But it was glorious. It was glorious. And when Peyton Manning threw that ball straight into young Mr. Porter's arms, and he took it to the house, that was some sweet football. And so congratulations to all the Saints fans, and congratulations to the city of New Orleans that isn't really back, but got to feel for a little bit like it was, and maybe saw a vision of what can be. It was a great game to watch. Now, with that having been said, somewhere down into the program, and I know you are sick to death of it, but somewhere in the program, now that the stupid focus on your family thing has run, I think that it would be appropriate, not about the message, not about the fact that they're anti-womb weirdos or anti-woman weirdos or anything like that, but I think it would be appropriate somewhere in the program to have a brief discussion of sorts, of some duration, of just what it means, the content of Pam Tebow's story, because you didn't get it. That whole stupid ad that went by, and I believe it was our buddy Lee from Austin. Let me see. Yeah, here it is. Hey, Bob, not to rub it in, but I had a really nice Super Bowl. I ate crawfish pie till I was about to bust at the seams, along with red beans and rice with andouille and jambalaya. Smoked some Nat Sherman's while drinking Stone IPAs and had a few wonderful shots of some really fine the single malt 18-year-old scotch that I will not, even though I am of Scots heritage, will not try to pronounce. Bruichladdich. I think it's pronounced Four Roses. There was also buttermilk soaked chicken wangs and scratch made blue cheese dip that made the tongue explode. And yeah, the game was okay too. Lee says, I got lucky and the sound was down. And this is what I was getting to. I got lucky and the sound was down when the Tebow commercial was on. Since I hadn't seen his mom before, all I could think was, wow, Mary Steenburgen looks really old. Perfect. Just perfectly. Sorry, Focus on the Family, Lee says. You were not able to wreck my game. The boost shuffling crew with Iron Mike came closer to doing that. Or the boot shuffling crew with Iron Mike came closer to doing that than you jerks did. Then after the game, when the hugging and crying was done, I started looking at photos from, he says, Marion's husband's photos from his last road trip. He plays with Ivan Neville, which included a couple of nights in New Orleans. And guess what? Wait for it. Of course, the neighborhood they lived in hasn't been rebuilt. Looks like the place got hit last week. Oh, well, my friends. Since I had no dog in the fight, I'm happy for you. I really am. But I'm dismayed to think that this win rights the wrongs that have been dumped on that part of the country. And, of course, it doesn't. Like I said, though, perhaps it's a vision. Perhaps it is at least a vision of a shared vision. A vision of a vision. Really, that's what I mean to say. But that's the truth. Mrs. Tebow looks like an old actress that, you know, the cocaine nights kind of finally caught up with. But anyway, I think somewhere down in the program it would probably be okay for us to examine her story. Because I did over the weekend. And it is so full of holes. God, a Swiss cheese has more structural integrity than Mrs. Tebow's story. She's been diagnosed with two or three things by now. And this is why I kept begging all last week, won't someone please do some basic journalistic inquiry into Mrs. Tebow's story. And I finally saw a story with a byline on it earlier today, sort of a post-focus wrap-up of the really lame-ass ad. And it was. It was really lame. So naturally it's being hailed as the earth-shattering and trend-setting by the We Hate Women's Insides movement. I actually wrote to a real live journalist saying, why were these questions never asked? Now, here's the kicker on the story. I, of course, have not had a response. And so there you have it. If you ever wanted proof that the First Amendment has been reduced to little more than a life support system for the religion industry, then you have it, frankly, in the Tebow story. Because if you or I came out with a story like Pam Tebow's, Lord knows if a Democratic or liberal politician came out with a story like Pam Tebow's, it would be subjected to a level of scrutiny only achievable with a scanning electron microscope. The intensity would be so severe. But since it's all clothed in the swaddling garb of religion and faith, then, well, it's okay. She could have just said that the God came down and an angel said, "Lo, Pam Tebow, thou shalt have a Heisman quarterback," and nobody will question it because it's a part of faith, right? So I think you know, if you're up for it, somewhere later in the program, somebody remind me, and we will do a little nosing around in it because, well, frankly, nobody else has. And honest to God, I've been all over the inner tubes, and I think I'm the only person, and this isn't me inflating my own self-worth. I don't need to do that. I'm comfortable with me. But honest to God, I have been all over the inner tubes all weekend long, and I have not found where not one single person has asked the questions that I asked. You know, I don't like Pam Tebow. She's not worth the time it takes to dislike. I frankly don't care. But when those people try to interject their religious philosophy into my secular world, I reserve the right to object. And when that insertion is based on something that isn't even questioned, well, then it gets even uglier. But no one questioned her story with anything approaching the tools of journalism whatsoever. Agnes and I talked back and forth over the course of the weekend about the thing because, you know, she doesn't pay as much attention to this kind of, and it doesn't get her in the same kind of lather that it gets me. But then I started explaining to her what Pam Tebow's excuses and story were, and all of a sudden, All of a sudden, that little light went on in Agnes's eyeballs. And she was all, but wait a minute. That can't, that, medically, it, because, you know, Agnes is a recovering nurse. And Agnes saw that it was a load of hagiographic, propagandistic, the horse crap. And so we talked a good bit about it over the weekend, and I showed her the ad. And, well, she's standing right here. How did you like the Focus ad, honey? Come on, get up close to the microphone. Come on, it's okay.
I didn't really like it at all.
You liked the Betty White ad better, didn't you?
Oh, I love Betty White. Yeah, she rocks.
And you and the rest of America seeing Abe Vigoda get sacked went, wow, Abe's still alive?
Okay, I did do that, yeah.
You know, Pete, that shows the power of People magazine. They declared Abe Vigoda dead 28 years ago, and Abe Vigoda spent the last 28 years going, but.
Well, I love fish.
Yeah, well, and what was the character in The Godfather? I can never remember. Tell Michael I always liked him. It was only business. But no, Mrs. Tebow's story didn't exactly hold up, did it?
No. And what's worse is she's saying that God saved her child, but what about all the children that aren't saved?
Well, God, yeah. What she's saying is God likes me better. Do like me. Give money to our family hustle, and God will like you too. It's the essence of neo-Calvinism. And may I add for the record, Agnes, you smell real pretty.
Thank you, Bob.
I'm going away.
Well, she does. Yeah, she found on a big bargain, a bottle of one of my favorite colognes for her and. It's nice. It's very nice. So we got that going for us. But the other thing, of course, hey, kids, it's More and Monday. That's right, More and Monday on the horn. And, of course, Tim Tebow's a part of that. But, my God, there's no sense in having a competition. Utterly no sense whatsoever. If Mussolini, Caribou Barbie, Godzilla from Wasilla, Sarah Palin didn't just, I don't know, we might have to retire the Moran Monday trophy at this point. If she didn't just take it and run away with it this past Saturday evening, I don't know what you got to do to pull that off. How do you be? Well, let's work in reverse. And let's try to sort of tie this together culturally, so to speak. Do you remember when the James O'Keefe story broke and the response of Fox News was, well, this is a, you know, the guy's sitting there, he's not wearing his little pimp suit anymore, he's wearing his inmate suit. And Fox News says, well, this is going to take a lot of context. Oh, this is a very complicated story. I'm sure there's a lot of context. Remember that? Well, let's start with the Fox News response, because it is Moran Monday. Let's start with the Fox News response and Gretchen Carlson and Steve Doocy and Brian Kilmeade, that merry crew. A minute and 47 seconds, I might add. Let's start with their response to the fact that fundamentalist Sarah Palin, evangelical Sarah Palin, who has African preacher, evangelical exorcists come to her church and lay hands on her and pray over her. And you know, when you're that kind of evangelical, if you're even caught in the same aisle at Toys R Us with the Ouija boards, you know, you need a good spiritual cleansing, because the devil done got all over your ass just by being close to a Ouija board. Not allowed. No. I don't care if the funnies are on the same page as the horoscopes. You don't go to that page because the devil is on that page. Don't read them. You are not no Aquarius. You're a Christian. And there's nothing like reading the horoscopes to let the devil get his little get his 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 little claw-ended toe into the doorway of your soul. I mean, they're really like that. No horoscopes, no Ouija boards. I don't know if they play the lottery. God, I hope they don't. I need a little help. My numbers are sucking air. But it turns out, with all of that behind her, it's okay if Sarah Palin's a palm reader. So when she got caught reading crib notes off her palm, and frankly, my favorite part of it, and the best picture I've seen of it yet, is over there at headonradionetwork.com. Because Sue found a blown-up photo of the notes that were written in her hand. And it's the fact that she edits on her palm. Huh! Oh, Marvelline! Get the smelling salts. It was just, it was pure and unmitigated lunacy. But that's okay. Because Fox News exists almost solely and expressly and exclusively to make excuses for right-wing lunacy. It's that simple. Let's go to Gretchen Carlson, otherwise known on Saturday Night Live as Attractive Blonde Lady. Let's go to Gretchen Carlson, Steve Doocy, and Brian Kilmeade right now.
One of the first things she said was she took a shot at the guy who used a teleprompter. And yet they looked at some of the close-up photographs of her hands during something. Yeah. And as you can see, right there, it says at the top, she has written on her own hand, she wrote the word energy, then there's something illegible, then taxes, and lift America's spirits. Seven words. And those on the left, a number of people on the left have said, look, she's taking a shot of the guy who uses a teleprompter, and here she is. She's a nincompoop who writes on her hand.
I think she did it on purpose.
You do?
I think she did it on purpose, yeah, because I think it's an exact opposite of reading off the teleprompter, reading off complete script written for you with every word in a sentence, and here she's just taking crib notes on her hand. It makes it look as if she can just talk off the cuff.
Literally.
And right. That she just jotted down a few couple notes before she went out to give a big, long speech.
Wow. Graduated with honors from Stanford, and Gretchen Carlson uses phrases like, she just jotted down a few couple notes. Whew. You can't, you know what, ask any football coach in the country. You can't coach talent. You can do skills training. You can teach a quarterback to read, but talent can't be coached. You can't make talent appear. And you cannot create a professional broadcast host who says things with no artifice whatsoever. It's not me sitting here, doing my redneck shtick. When Gretchen Carlson, honors graduate from Stanford, says, she just jotted down a few couple notes. You know that you are in the presence of real broadcast greatness. But anyway.
I think she did it because she's. I think she did it because she probably does it a lot. I do that all the time.
But I personally am jealous because I used to get in trouble. I used to get in trouble if I wrote on my palm because my mom explained to me the ink would get through my pores and I would die. So I stopped doing that in the fifth grade. Why doesn't she just, there's nothing wrong if she had a card. Just jot a card down. Energy, taxes, hope, whatever it is.
Sure.
But, and then no one has a problem looking down. But to sit there and look at, do the interview and then look down at her hand.
At her hand.
I think that is... It's like you said, Gretchen, before, folksy, absolutely, down to earth, I can identify. But if you're going to write on your hand, why don't you just say, staffer, can you hand me a card?
Nah.
And then it would have been okay.
I think it was on purpose, but anyway, we may never know.
Yeah, we may never know. Well, here's a hint. And again, you kind of have to, maybe you have to have the visual in order for this to work. But, it's not that she writes on her hand. It's that she edits there, too. Now, you really can't, I mean, because this is radio and you can't see me doing what I do. You'll just kind of have to take my word for it when I say that as an old, worn-out, tired English major, that when I sit down to write an essay, I'll go for a while, and then I'll step away from it, go in, get myself a hot, steaming cup of decaf, you know, play a couple of games of Mahjong on the computer, and then come back at it and read it again, and then the editing starts, and some additions and some subtractions. You know, it's nothing. Honest to God, I can throw together 5,000 words without thinking. If you've ever read what I write, you know there's definitely no thinking going on. But at any rate, editing is a brutal, brutal business. Because once you've committed those words to electrons or ink to paper or whatever, they're yours. And so you get rid of them with some degree of trepidation. Or maybe you save succeeding versions of the draft so that you can see how the thing progressed, A, B, C, D, E, F, G. Sarah Palin edits the notes that she writes on her hand, because what was there, first you see the word budget, and budget has been crossed out. She started out by writing budget cuts, and then, oh no, gosh, you golly, you betcha they won't like the idea of budget cuts, because nobody likes budget. So she scratches out budget and writes in tax. So then her first note is to talk about tax cuts, don't you know? And then she follows with her next topic, and this is where she got in trouble because she couldn't remember it. You know, little hint to Gretchen Carlson. One line out of a comedy does not the comedy make. It is the interaction of everything around the comedy. And so, in this little tableau, and I realize that by the time you get around to explaining why a joke is funny, the funny is long gone. But this is more analytical stuff for the purposes of Moran Monday, and why it is that I think we need to retire Sarah Palin's number. I don't think she can be nominated for Moran Monday anymore. I think she just owns it. It's the Palin Trophy. It's the Mussolini Trophy, just like the Super Bowl. Just like the Super Bowl is named after the first great Super Bowl winning coach, Vince Lombardi, the Lombardi Trophy, so too, each Moran Monday will have to be an awarding of the Caribou Barbie Trophy, the Mussolini Trophy. What shall we name it? That's up to you. You are welcome to send your thoughts with what the award should be named. BobKincaid@gmail.com, BobKincaid@gmail.com. And you know, this thing is just and for non-professional comics like me, and many, many other people with their Twitter accounts. What was one I saw? I saw a retweet from Texas Betsy, read my hand, no new taxes. You know, when the people who aren't necessarily pros are doing that, what room's left for the professional comics? Honestly, really. And I got to thinking about it, all right. In from David in Tennessee, the Caribou Barbie Moose Pie Memorial Trophy. I like it. Somebody in graphic arts is going to have to get busy designing one of these things so that we'll have a Moran Monday trophy icon for every Moran Monday that rolls around. But honest to God, she can't win Moran Monday anymore. We're retiring her snow machine riding parka. Or we're retiring her helicopter, her wolf-shooting helicopter, whatever. She just can't win Moran Monday anymore because there has to be hope for the other morons out there. They have to have something to aspire to with their moranity. And there's the question. Yeah, the Caribou Barbie Moose Pie Memorial Trophy. Could anyone else make a steamier pie? And thus it is that Repiglickens the world over will aspire to Moran Monday all the more. But, the thing was a self-writing joke. I think somewhere along the way I tweeted, "Don't be so hard." Don't be so hard on Mussolini. She just heard. Don't be so hard on Mussolini. Everyone's got an iPhone except her, so she wanted to try the new Palm. Yeah, I know. Try the veal. I'll be here all week. It's a gift that just keeps on giving. But again, we're not even done with her script. Because, you see, that's what that was on her hand. In a brain as small as that of Sarah Palin, what was on her hand was a script. It was a full-on script. It's the equivalent of Laurence Olivier having the to be or not to be soliloquy written out down his entire forearm. It was a script. So what she wanted to do is the first thing, she wanted to talk about the need to cut the budget and, you know, get that spending there all under control, don't you know? But then she realized that, like I said, budget cutting, you know, that, I don't think that's going to play because then all of a sudden they'll be talking about how we'll be cutting Medicare and maybe that I'm wanting to be the queen of the death panels there, Dear Hay. Oh, sorry, Dear Hay, that's Wisconsin. So she crosses out budget and writes in tax underneath it. So we'll talk about tax cuts. That's what we want, tax cuts. Of course, we'll never know if she said this to somebody and said, no, Sarah, not budget cuts, tax cuts. We'll never know if that was her original Moran idea or if some other Moran handed it to her. And then her second topic was energy. Drill, baby, drill! So that's where she got into trouble. She started talking about her tax cuts and how that spending was all out of whack, don't you know? And then she forgot her next talking point, and that's when she had to look down at her hand, where she found her energy. But even this is subject to analysis. Wow, I haven't done this since I was playing Beatles albums backwards. And what I mean by that is, remember, we're talking about a pageant queen here of some sort. I'm not sure if she was talking about drill baby drill energy, or if she was talking about, lots of smiles there, smiling, good energy, Sarah, gotta project that good energy. Who knows? And then after energy, and the reason I wonder about that, whether energy means like, gotta drill and gotta blow some more of those mountains up, don't you know, so we can have cheap, affordable energy right here in the U.S. of America. Or whether she was talking about smiling a lot. Because the final one, and it's hard to read, it's the hardest part of the whole thing to read. The last notation, the last bullet point, or palm point, if you will, is lift America's spirits. So, you know, we're going to get that great coal energy and that great oil energy from the Anwar.
And it's going to make America great again, because America can be great if we just have a little bit more, you know, corporate control of our country. And we can be great through God's graces and blessings. Hallelujah. Imesema las divivar. Oh, I'm doing it again.
That was the, you know, that was the part that really, really lift America's spirits. And then, knowing what was on her palm, I went back and I watched the video again. Like I said, there was a lot of time to kill until the Super Bowl kickoff. And so I watched the video repeatedly to see where and when she was working from her script. And the tax cuts and she wanted to talk about this runaway spending, which is, of course, budgetary. And then she wanted to talk about energy. And then she wanted to lift America's spirits. And it's the part about lifting America's spirits. Oh, by the way, Sue is pointing out to me, ELO, Den Mother of the Chat Room, that she also was wearing a black bracelet that said Sarah. So, you know, she even had her own name written down for her in case she forgot. Ah, yeah, David in Tennessee, you betcha. It'll make the city on the hill a little bit shinier, that energy and those spirits. But really. So she talked about some spending, and then she talked about some energy, and then she wanted to lift America's spirits. Watch the video. That is when she starts stroking her stockinged leg. And I don't know if I'm the only one. No, I don't have the hots for Sarah Palin. Ugh. Ah, sorry. Just had to get out of my brain. But anyway, I pay attention to these things. Stroke your leg. But she did. When she'd gotten done with the tax cuts and the budget, she started running her hand up and down her own leg. And I was thinking, Jesus Christ, thank God there's not a pole there. She'll start working that and going for tips. At 100 large for that. And again, 100 large to read off your hand. No, wrong business. I am so in the wrong business. Actually, I'm working the wrong side of the room. Because apparently it doesn't take much to shake 100 large out of the right wing. Oh, we're going to plow it back into the campaign there. Yeah, it's nice to see that that you guys are as horrified by as I... Oh. Yeah, as my colleague John Fox notes, Palin is a middle-aged 16-year-old still playing cheerleader. Oh, cheat notes on my palm. And I love, too. I love Todd, too, for fark's sake. Yeah. And Cobwebs in the chat room knows, yeah, Bob, but if you watch real close, she ran her hand up and down her leg right after checking her hand for an answer. That's the whole point. She read, lift America's spirits, and started stroking her leg. She's not sure if she's a politician, an author, a media personality, or a stripper. And I say that with a great amount of respect to the professional strippers out there. But Lord God, Billy Bob, have you? And the other stuff out there, and the one-liner of the weekend goes to Saturday Night Live's cold opening Saturday night, obviously enough, which ended right before the Live from New York. It's Saturday night with I forget what her name is playing Greta Van Susteren saying, and in a minute we'll cut away to the Tea Party convention where a woman in a Snoopy shirt is about to say something racist. But if you want to see some great, great fun from Teabagapalooza, then I've got the place for you. You know, our buddy Matt Osborne said he was going up to Nashville because he was advised by David in Tennessee, "Be careful, son. Them folks are in no good. They're in no good mood." But Matt went on up because he's a hero. He's a hero of the internet. And he had a very long weekend, and it was very taxing and very stressful. So go on over to osborneinc.com, OSBORNEINK.com, and it's right at the top of the page. Sarah Palooza 2, convention crashing. Oh, Matt's always good for a one-liner, too. You know, I work with a lot of really funny people. The revolution will be monetized. Matt says, sorry about the audio quality at 2 points. There's nothing I can do until such time as the evil plan sees fit to cut me a fat check to buy better equipment. And there are links there to his written account as well. This is one not to miss. You know, if you want to know how to spell intrepid in four letters, actually three, one of them's repeated. If you want to know how to spell intrepid in four letters, it's M-A-T-T. So at some point, go on over to osborneinc.com, OSBORNEINK.com, and have a look at the video. I got a call from Matt right after a lot of it went down. And you know what? There were elements of the call that were somewhat reminiscent of getting a phone call from maybe Hunter S. Thompson. Bob, there are bats all over, Bob! Matt had a Dickens of it. Go see for yourself. And he was chased by some crazy lady. Well, you know, it's not like David didn't warn him. You know what I mean? So that's a starting place. And, of course, there are some horror stories out there. There's one in particular that just, Jesus criminy. I've been trying to think about how do you do, some of these stories, just how do you do them and not just scream yourself rag-throated in the process? And we will find out the answer to that later. And we will also investigate the issues relating to Mrs. Tebow and her semi-miraculous but not really not involving three wise guys on anybody's front stoop Timmy Tebow birth ad. And we'll ask the question, why is it necessary? Well, no, we won't ask the question. We'll just sort of connect some dots. But anyway, we're going to do that later in the program. And, you know, if you want to stop and yell who dat a couple of times along the way, fine by me. I'll join in. You know, I saw footage on ESPN from Bourbon Street the minute that the game was over, and it just erupted. And you know what? I haven't read any stories about people going just ass crazy. Just party. But for my money, I'll bet you the real party was, you know, blocks away from Bourbon Street. That's where the fun was, without a doubt. But that's our starting place for the evening. It's about 20 minutes before the hour, and you know how to reach the program, of course. 877, toll free, 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on. Or on your nickel if you've got some sort of professional broadcaster, unlimited long-distance dialing program, you can call us at 304-658-3333. Email comes into Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com. And just from the looks of things, I think you guys have done a wonderful job of getting the word out, responding to that blog post over at over at buzzflash.com. We're up past 40 posts, and the words that you guys have said have been just stunning, and to me, humbling. Because I don't think you were blowing smoke. I think you were talking about what you really, really do get out of the horn, and I'm not just talking about me. And to see that what we have tried to do has had that kind of an effect is amazing. So jump in and have at it. And now, enough about me, let's talk about you. To the phones we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Thank you. This is Edward in Dallas.
Well, hey, Edward.
I just want to call and thank you for what you do. I get my news from you and Guy James when he's on the air, and Mike Malloy, and Overman, and Matt O, and John Stewart, and Stephen Colbert, and I miss Rick's place. And I really like Sandra and Juanita. They're very funny.
You know, if there was some way to do it, Edward, I think we could probably turn some of the brilliant women who call this program loose and have a radio version that would put The View to shame.
You're absolutely correct. I'd love to see it. Oh, my. Of course, on The View, I don't watch it because I can't stand to. I scream at the television and so I don't watch it anymore, but I do like Whoopi and Joy Behar.
Yes.
I like those two. But anyhow, thank you for what you all do, and I'll swear if I see that woman, Sarah Lou Suckumsilly, on the TV again, I'm going to faint.
Wait a minute. All right, let me pencil right there, little dot on the tongue. Sarah Lou Suckumsilly. Is it? Have I got that?
You got it.
I'm owning it. I'm owning it. I'll credit you when I remember, Edward. But
that's all right. You know, I think a lot of those old white men follow her around because they know she can suck the nails out of a tube before.
Oh God. Oh, that one hurt.
Tell me I wasn't supposed to.
No. That was just you just landed a body blow on me, and it, every now and then I get something happens that I'm not looking for, and it's just, but then I just shot Coca-Cola out my nose. Let's face it.
Oh Lord, I'm so sorry.
No, don't apologize. It was beautiful.
Well, you all take care, and. The last time I was through West Virginia was in 1947, and I'll bet you it's not as pretty now as it used to be.
Not by a long shot, Edward, not by a long shot.
You know, I was also through Coppertown and Duck, west of Asheville, North Carolina, and that's where they did that strip mining. It looked like the valley on the moon.
Well, I tell you what, if you will, if you'll shoot me an email, Edward, I'll send you a couple of links where you can see some real moons, some modern moonscapes, and it'll make you run around the room screaming.
Okay, let me. I'm having trouble with my phone.
No, no worries. I have trouble with mine all the time.
I don't write well with one hand, the phone on the other in my ear.
Well, it's real easy. It's just Bob Kincaid, bobkincaid@gmail.com, and I'll look for an email from you, and I will as quick as I can.
gmail.com.
Right. And I'll send you,
K-I-N-C-A-I-D.
Yeah, Bob, bobkincaid at gmail.com.
Gotcha.
And I'll send you some links, and all you got to do is click on them, and the photographs of what's going on here will be hair-raising.
Well, let me tell you, I have trouble getting Mike Malloy. He's on at the station out in Seattle, I think. But he comes on there at 9 o'clock, which is 11 o'clock here. And at 10 o'clock, something magical happens to me. I turn into a bed. Poof, yeah. Right in front of your eyes. I have a problem there.
Well, I can certainly understand that. I think that magic must hit me from time to time, too, because sometimes you just slap run out of gas.
Yeah, I've been trying to, you know, get filled up for several years now, but it hasn't worked. Take care, y'all.
Well, thank you, Edward. We'll talk soon.
Okay.
All right. Bye. Bye now. That's Edward calling from Texas, and on we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
I'm doing good.
Yeah. I'm calling in to say that I was wrong. I thought of who that was going to lose, but they...
Gary, I had my faithless moment, too. That, you know, those first couple of... well, I think they got one first down. They ran nine plays in the first... It wasn't looking good. But they readjusted and... Brought every
the
bit
that kick. I think it was the onside kick. I think if they didn't get that onside kick, I think Peyton would have got on the road.
Is that the gutsiest call ever in the history of the Super Bowl?
Yeah, you know, and it was the smartest call because it was the call you had to take. You know what I mean? If you think about it, you couldn't give Peyton the ball back. So, you know, it was pretty interesting. It was a good game though. You know, either way.
Oh, it was a wonderful game. And you know what? I was really pleased to see that. The officials didn't call it too awful tight, so it didn't turn into a penalty fest, and they didn't become the game. When I saw the replay of that 2-point conversion, it seemed obvious to me that they had blown the call on the field, which was a little weird for me because if you saw the footage, the ref was sitting there staring right at the ball. How do you miss that? But it's obvious the ball wasn't moving when it crossed the plane, so, yeah, they got, you know, at least thank God for replay.
Yeah, I think the thing was with it, though, was that, too, that he did lose some kind of control of it before. But see, I don't know what the rules are because if you're in the air, and I guess that the rules are you have to just, as long as you have control of it, and you could be in the air or whatever, right? Once across the plane, it's a touchdown, correct?
Well, and that's the whole thing. It's possession in the plane. If you are in possession of the ball, if you're in the air, and if you're on Mars, and it goes across the plane to the goal line in bounds, it counts.
Yeah, because like if you're out in the middle of the field, you have to actually, you know, come down with your feet. You know that whole
right
rule applied.
Right, but you know we've seen hundreds of times every season the guy who is on the way out of bounds and he's palming the ball in one hand. And he reaches and crosses gets it across the plane while the rest of him is on the way out. If it's across the plane before he hits the ground, there are no questions.
Yeah. Like I said, it was a good game. I mean, I ended up, you know, having to root for New Orleans anyway because I told you my friend is in New Orleans. So it's like she was kind of down the night before because she was working on a campaign down there. They lost their elections on Saturday. But they were kind of down.
Yeah, that was, what, Mary Landrieu's brother won the mayoral election?
Yeah, it wasn't even close, she told me. The person that they had, they thought it would at least be a runoff or something like that. And she just said, like, the African-American vote, they just got bought off down there. And she was telling me, too, that down there, you know, you just give, you know, a certain amount of money to the paper, they endorse you, so... you know, it's
kind of
crazy.
Louisiana politics is a sport unto itself, and it's a blood sport too.
It's totally, totally, you know, totally corrupt.
And that goes way back to before the days of Huey Long.
Yeah, I don't know much about a lot about New Orleans politics that much. You know, not really my repertoire. All I know is I've been there a couple times, and all I know, people I kind of know. They just tell me a lot that's very, very corrupt. It's been corrupt for the last 300 years or so. So I just find, you know, somewhat interesting. But like I said, it was a good game. One thing I was going to tell you quick, I know you got some other calls, I'm going to get off. I was sitting there thinking some big TiVo thing, the commercial, and when it came on, it was like, okay, this is what Bob is talking about. I looked at it, I was like, it was like nothing. I mean, what, I don't even know what the curse, I didn't even know what the, it was a terrible commercial, first of all. I didn't even know what it was about. I mean, and then he comes in and tackles her? Isn't that kind of like violent? I mean, I didn't get that whole, the whole thing, I didn't get at all.
And you know, there have been some notes out there. Wow, they're celebrating family by doing violence to a woman. Cool. Because I mean, it was all stunt done and everything. But yeah, he tackled her. Timmy. But it's also being hailed by the right wing. And of course, if those two had come on screen and juggled, it would be hailed by the right wing. But it's being hailed as subtle. This shows the transformation of the pro-life movement to a much more subtle messaging strategy that will be far more successful in the American dialogue. I've already read that.
Yeah, well, I mean, anybody who knows anything about young people who I work with and stuff will tell you they're a lot more liberal and going in the right direction than any of our parents or anybody else was. I don't know how long this right-wing agenda is going to last, but I see that they're even kind of moving away from it. You notice they're going toward the Tea Partiers and the militia people because they can't get the so-called Christians anymore. You know. So it's going to be interesting. I mean, I'm not saying that the Christian right is going away, but it's clear the Republicans are not trying to curtail them anymore. I think they realize that's kind of a limited range for them, where the country's headed. So.
But, you know, I did what Focus on the Family wanted me to do. And they must have spent a fortune on bandwidth, because everybody and their cousin went to that website after, and they spent a fortune on bandwidth, and even so, it was still breaking up and becoming unintelligible as I tried to. But I watched it later when things calmed down, and what they wanted you to do was to hear Pam Tebow's hagiographical account of the birth of little Timmy. And that thing, like I said, a Swiss cheese has more integrity than hers does, because her story is full of holes. It doesn't add up medically. It doesn't add up on its time. It doesn't add up.
Well, the thing is, like, you know, even in the commercials, almost like she was kind of admitting it to some in an abstract way, because she, you know, she didn't come out with a flat statement. If that's what happened, just come out with a flat statement, you know. Unless they got lawyered up, and CBS said, no, we can't run that because we're going to get so much blowback later on from the fact.
Well, the thing to remember, Gary, is it wound up being what it was because CBS had, in fact, objected to earlier manifestations of it.
Yeah, I'm sure they had something worse.
Oh, I'm sure they did. You know, look, it's the religious right. If they could wave bloody fetuses on the screen, they would, because they have. You know, it's hard. Anywhere, somewhere in the South right now, there is a billboard that shows an aborted fetus. There are trucks that drive around from town to town with aborted fetuses on the side of the truck and like some sort of carnival freak show display. You can go through and look at the effects of abortion. Now, I'm not making this up.
I guess you could write us a whole thesis on why they're more concerned about birth than actual life, just living as today and preserving that.
Right, and that's the whole
point.
Why
can't these people show up for the health care? I mean, if they're so concerned, why aren't they concerned about that hospital in L.A. where a lot of young African-American men are dying off of dialysis? They just put them in this room, and, you know, and they just go there to die, and nobody, you know, you don't see that on the news. But
remember, Gary, what the catchphrase was, or the tagline to this little stupid little ad, which, by the way, was named lamest ad of the Super Bowl. Celebrate family. Really? Celebrate family? Okay, let's ask those 45,000 people who are going to die between now and this time next year because of lack of access to health care coverage in this country. Let's say celebrate family to their families while they're putting their loved one in the dirt. You know, I'm thinking Tim and Pam Tebow don't want to be given that celebrate family speech to anybody under those circumstances. It's myopic, Gary. It is a myopic view of a lily white world where as long as you don't have an abortion, your baby will grow up and get a Heisman Trophy.
Well, I mean, I know you don't, you know, you're very strong against the Christian religion, but it's, in terms of the way the right wing views it, which is understandable because I'm the same way. But, you know, even the Bible, I mean, clearly says in their so-called Bible, that, you know, in the last days that the devil will sit in the temple and that he'll be running that church and, you know, he'll run the church and people of God will have actually been told to come out of that church. I mean, you know, even Jesus' day, I mean, it was the Pharisees, the people in the church that hung him. You know, people go out and say the Jews, they really were the Jews. You know, it's the church people.
It was the organizational management structure of the religion.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, and they seem like they're doing the same thing again. They crucify his teaching. They lie. Come on TV. You know, it's really anyway. But I know it's not Wednesday, so I'm gonna let you go. But you know, like I said, it was a good game. It sounds like you had a good time watching it. So I think that's what counts. To get that commercial, you know.
The commercials were a little off. They weren't as good as they usually. They didn't seem as good, and maybe it's a function of the economy. The best one by far had to be the Betty White ad. The Snickers ad.
Yeah.
Where the guy, you've been playing like Betty White all day. You know, that was because she's just got such a guy. Yeah, the squirrel wasn't bad. Yeah, and the fiddle playing beaver. Was just loaded with overtones and undertones and stuff like that. But now the Betty White is just such a comic genius in the first place. You know, whether on the Mary Tyler Moore Show playing Sue Ann Niven, or in that wonderfully offbeat horror flick Lake Placid, just perfect timing. Go ahead.
Just one quick question. As you mentioned, saying that in terms of the Sarah Palin thing, I really couldn't watch a lot of the games because my sister was calling me regarding the Sarah Palin issues that were popping up, I guess, all day Sunday or whatever, you know, late Sunday in terms of, so she was reading the Huffington Post and stuff like that. And, you know, I went back and looked at some of this stuff, and I was really watching all this stuff, and I was thinking about a conversation we had the other day. You know, it's really amazing how the Democrats cannot capitalize on this moment. It is amazing. Now I hear that Obama is going to have this health care forum or whatever this and that. And now the Republicans are saying that they don't want to participate.
Yeah, they're not going to. Not if it's going to be on camera, they're not.
But see, here's the thing, Bob. I would like to see. Let's see, you know, because Democrats are so weak. But this is the one time. Well, you now, if the bomb strategy and, you know, the Democrat strategy is to expose the Republicans, which they seem to have been hidden towards, that was like the grand Vulcan strategy, whatever you want to call it, then we'll know, because at this point, they have to be called out. I mean, they have to be sending out people every day, demanding from a bullhorn that the Republicans come to the table, sit up front, and show every idea they have, and show how, you know, they're going to pay for health care and yada, yada, yada. Because in the end, if anything else, it'll bring attention to health care. And maybe you can start exposing it to the American people that really does have to get done.
Oh, I agree, Gary. And look, here's how it plays out. If Barack Obama is the Jedi Master that we have been led to believe he is, and if he's really playing nine-dimensional chess, then it shakes out like this. They know they did an experiment with the Republican House retreat and saw how that went. And more importantly, the Senate Republicans saw how that went. So when the invite went out to do the same thing with the Senate, they said, John Cornyn came out and said, I don't see no need for no TV cameras. And now the door is being opened. Well, it's Moran Monday, so why shouldn't we talk about him? That freak from Virginia, Eric Cantor, he's saying that unless the president and Speaker Pelosi are willing to scrap their government takeover and hit the reset button, there's not much to talk about. So here's how it plays out.
That's not the point of the meeting. The point of the meeting is they want to hear his ideas. That's what he said. I mean, you know.
No, he wants to hear theirs.
Democrats can't let them take that talking point and run with it. with it like that. Oh, we're going to, because that's what the Republicans are going on. It's like reset, 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 you know?
Right, but wait. I mean, I'm just laying out if this is nine-dimensional chess played by a Jedi Master.
Okay.
Here's how it shakes out. So they say no thank you. And at that point in time, the work has already been done, you know, and there's some background work going on here, but the work's already been done by the House Senate Conference Committee, and Obama says, fine, I invited you to the table, I asked you what your ideas were, you said you didn't want to meet with me, Harry and Nancy are having the reconciliation vote on Tuesday. And the Republicans are left to sit there, and you have to schedule it quick. So that there's no time to gin up Fox News, you know, that's just, you know, there it is, and it happens, and we get health care. That is how you play a game of Jedi Master nine-dimensional chess.
Well,
you get
everything
them to,
that you're saying, from what I've been seeing, is it seems to be that's what they're doing. But, you know, is February 25th too long?
Yes.
You know?
Yes. Well, no, wait. February
25th. If they don't show up, then, you know.
February 25th is not too long, but if on February 25th they don't show, then the vote happens the next time Congress is in session. Period. And you don't announce it. You don't do anything. You call the quorum. You call the vote. It's done. And it's early enough in the electoral season of 2010 that you can probably get away with it. Another day, another month, another week, another month, and you know, by the time, look, there are already elections happening. If this thing goes into March, goes into April, goes into May, it ain't gonna.
Yeah.
And nothing will happen after June.
Yeah, Democrats got to look at this. I mean, you look at Kennedy, you look at Martha, you know, and not to say it can't happen on the other side, but nothing lasts forever. You have to seize the moment when you have it. You know, you just can't sit back and say, okay, we got a certain amount of time. Just like people don't have time on the dialysis machine, you know, we don't have a lot of time here. So, I mean, they got to get health care done, and I think within the next 30 days, or, you know, or it's just not going to happen at that point. I mean, they got 30 days, so if we'll see. I still have faith they're trying to do something, but I'm somewhat discouraged with some of the process as all of us, you know.
Well, here, and you know, we're left in. I don't like being in this position. Well, gee, I hope he really is going to be a Jedi Master, because it makes me feel kind of stupid. But maybe I am, and you know what? I will be as happy. If they pass something that will save those 45,000 people, if they pass something that will do that, I will be happier than I was to see the Saints win the Super Bowl. That may make me sound shallow, but in case anybody was wondering, yeah, I really will be.
Well, can't they just pass the bill as is? Pass the bill as is. I know a lot of people on the left will be unhappy about it, you know, including myself. Well, I wouldn't say me, even though I'm on the left. I wouldn't say, you know, for me, the way the health care bid now, it would benefit me because I have health care. And I can pay for it. I want something that can contain costs, extend, you know, et cetera, and bring down, you know, the pre-existing conditions, which is an issue and all those type of things for me. But like anything, like Social Security and all these other bills in the past, they've always been amended. You know, Social Security, I believe, you know, African Americans weren't even included when it first came to what I understood.
Well, for the, yeah, because it didn't include farm workers, didn't include domestic workers, didn't, they were all, right. And most of the people that were excluded were effectively the black population.
Exactly. So you put a big framework in, okay, we passed a reform. Now you go in and you twinkle it to death. You know, you get it to the point where, you know, okay, it actually works functionally. I mean, and I personally believe 10, 20 years, and I know people don't believe this, but I believe America is going to have to get close to some kind of universal system. I think the budget constraints, and just like any other nation, it's fiscally the better thing to do, and eventually we're going to be forced to do that.
Yeah, and
why not do it earlier rather than wait to the last minute, like the bank stuff, and then, you know, be looking at oblivion, you know what I mean?
But by the same token, 20 years from now, we'll give a whole lot of America's blue dog crotchety class a chance to shuffle off this mortal coil and hopefully be replaced by somewhat more enlightened individuals. Of course, that's all against the backdrop of the untrammeled influence of the corporations as set free upon us by the Citizens United case. So, you know, there's some yin and yang involved there. But again, yeah, I don't know. If it takes the Senate version, then take the Senate version and vote it on reconciliation and then get busy on the fix. But the things that are important to me, especially based on the things that I learned a week and a half ago in D.C., one of the things that's most important is this, the Medicaid buy-in is fully funded by the federal government for 3 years after passage. Okay? And that takes with it, you know, the asset testing and all of that stuff. You know, frankly, the Medicaid equivalent of literacy tests in the old South for voting. That has to happen sooner rather than later. That can't happen. There's no point to it if that happens in 2013, Gary. That has to happen in 2010 or 90 days after signature or whatever it is. The Medicaid stuff, the Medicaid buy-in has to happen that quick.
Yeah. I mean, that's why the Republicans are not saying they're not for health care reform. They're not saying just kill it, you know, because they know that there's these budget problems coming. You know, they know Medicare. I mean, we can skate a little while on Social Security and stuff like that. You can make adjustments there. But they know what the big thing in the room, and whether Obama had to handle it or if someone was to get in, like not Palin, but another Republican, they would have to deal with it. So nobody, you know, everybody knows it needs to be fixed. But I think using this thing as a political football right now is just totally, totally irresponsible. I think Republicans should have just said, okay, we're going to work on this thing with the Democrats. We're going to get this out of the way, and then you get back to your little politics if you want to do that. But I think healthcare should have just, you know, it's like I don't want to say terrorism, but you know what I'm saying. It's something that so broad that we all should just, you know, as a collective, get involved in it. And it's just not just like the Republicans, like anything they can find to play politics. Man, it is, it's very sickening. It's disturbing. It's almost borderline crazy. It's soiling greenish. You know what I mean? It's just, yeah. I don't understand how you just take anything and everything. I mean, you read a guy who writes, whether it's 50 minutes or 5 minutes, that's a political football. You know, anything. You know, you hold up a whole 70 nominations, you know, because you want to get something for your state. I mean, that's what I'm talking about. I was talking about the other day about it. Just, this self-interest is, like, crazy. Man, anyway, let me get off the phone. My blood pressure is starting to go up.
All right, yeah, that's no good. You take care, Gary. We'll talk soon.
Okay.
All right. Bye now. Calling from the D.C. area, from Maryland, that's our buddy Gary, and onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, good evening.
Hey, David, what's up?
Well, I wanted to bring this up, and I thought you were actually going to go there tonight with that Sarah Palin thing. But one thing people should keep in mind is where all this stuff originates from. And I noticed a lot of progressives and liberals do not do that, and they should do it. And where this originated from, originally on YouTube, was a channel called Stupid Sarah Palin. Now, if you go to her channel, Stupid Sarah Palin, you are led to a site called Wired Flow, which is, I quote, a leading strategic interactive agency with one goal in mind, to help our clients drive their business through interactive marketing. Now, what I'm getting at is this, people. If there's something going on that a lot of people don't pay attention to, and it's not a coincidence that this guy started up a channel, and it's not a coincidence that he had the footage, and it's not a coincidence someone linked this, and it's not a coincidence he hot-linked his page to Wired Flow. To me, this is like a viral campaign, and either the GOP is making her intentionally the clown to scrutinize the media even farther, to make their point across that the media is always picking on Sarah. Because I noticed, Bob, as soon as people picked up on this story, it was a nonstop, just poke fun at her, make fun of her, the crib notes. But you watch the video. This is important for people to pay attention to. You watch the video and you wonder the angles of the camera, the fact that you could see the writing on her hand. And again, I point to this, who shot that footage? And who got the footage originally?
Well, there were a couple of different versions of the footage as I saw it. One of them looked like it was either shot with a handy cam or maybe even a cell phone.
But what I'm saying is this, Bob, is that the person who originally put it up, you track it back. This is why I tell people to pay attention to, especially because liberals and progressives, they're not on this. You got to go back to the original video on YouTube. And the original video on YouTube goes to stupid Sarah Palin. What I'm getting at is he started up the channel as soon as he had that video. My question, and the question everybody should be asking, is where did he get that video?
But wasn't it all over by then? Or was it?
No. You don't understand.
Okay, maybe I don't. Help me.
The video that people were linking was from the YouTube. They were linking the YouTube video from this stupid Sarah Palin channel. This is the one that I was led to. And the thing that interests me, Bob, is the fact that it says on the channel, it says, this video went viral because of WiredFlow.com. And then you go to WiredFlow and you find out that it's a strategic interactive agency with one goal in mind, to help our clients drive their business through interactive marketing. Now, if you look at how many views this person has, it looks like he's making some kind of business because he's got 259,960 views so far. But my point is, Bob, is the fact that he started this channel as soon as he had this video. And he was the first one with this video. You see what I'm getting at?
Yeah, that it's a dodge. It sounds like it's a setup.
What I'm getting at is somebody at the GOP. I wouldn't be surprised if this guy works at the GOP.
Okay, I'm getting a back theory here that some dude took video of it while he was replaying it from his TV's DVR on CNN.
Because it was released.
I mean, it was covered live. That's the whole point.
It was covered live?
Yeah.
On CNN?
Yeah.
Well, what I'm saying is the fact that someone who put this up, and the fact that they lead you back to WiredFlow, I've studied internet marketing for a while, and I know a lot of people who are in this business. The hand gestures, the angles of the camera. I'm telling you, Bob, something's up. I'm telling you, there's something up about the whole thing.
So do you think that was that some sort of a hint coming from Fox then, that when Gretchen Carlson said, I think it was deliberate?
I don't know, but my possible theory is that the people who manage Brand Sarah are sabotaging her because they know the way to get headlines. So that maybe they give her bad advice intentionally to do this, to make her look like a fool on national TV. Because, I mean, people have to understand something. If someone who is not articulate to be on a camera and who does have odd mannerisms and is not prime time, sometimes what the publicity departments will do is they'll market it in a different way. They'll market her like the clown. And they'll push it really hard. I mean, because I've never seen her read crib notes like that before on her speeches. It looks very odd and suspicious for me that she would do that and that she would have her hand like that. And whoever's giving her advice,
all the footage that I've seen of it is fonted.
What I'm saying is I've never seen her. The way she was sitting down, the way you could see. See, here's the thing about it. You could see her hand. She put her hand out, and there was a can. That's the other thing.
See,
footage.
If you've ever read Arthur Conan Doyle and Sherlock Holmes and stuff,
right,
you know that there's a very famous phrase out there arising from those books, and that is,
yeah,
once you have eliminated the impossible, whatever is left, and of course this also comes from Star Trek, whatever, the dead Klingons in space.
Right.
Once you have eliminated the impossible, whatever is left, no matter how improbable, is likely the answer.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also Occam's razor. The simplest explanation is quite often the correct one, or most often the correct one. And frankly, David, she's a dim bulb.
I understand that, but I think they're
I don't think she is sharp enough to participate in that much nuance.
No, but see, what I'm saying is, I'm not saying she was participating. What I'm saying was they're just giving her bad advice intentionally to get these to get these Howard Dean type moments or these gaffes that that they amplify in the media. What I'm saying is she has some smart people in her publicity department. And again, I look.
Yeah, but what good does this do her?
I don't think it's what good it does her. I think it's what good it does the people who are selling the brand behind her. Just getting, see, my theory is they put her out there and they just want to get her headlines. And then they're just going to come back.
Well, if maybe the, if the PR department behind this is Fox, perhaps, because if you're Fox and you know that there's nothing she could do that would make you fire her, then there's no such thing as bad PR.
Right.
But this is, but frankly, something like this, unless she was in on the dodge, there's no way it winds up being any good for Fox because she's going to be horrible with them.
I don't think she, see, here's the thing about it, Bob. I don't think she was in it with dodge, and it's going to be interesting to see what other stunts they're going to pull to get news headlines and how it comes about. I'm just telling you this right now. The fact that someone started a channel and the fact that this is where I got this, the fact that where I got was linked to this on YouTube, I don't think it's a coincidence that it leads back to a company called Wired Flow. That's what I'm saying. And the fact, and again, the channel was just, Bob, this is something that I noticed, and this is something that Drudge does an awful lot, and I want people to pay attention to this. When Drudge and when people in the media link a story on YouTube, a lot of the times, that channel has just been started and you never see from it again. Or it stays around for a little bit. My point is these people are savvy when it comes to uploading videos now.
Well, they may have come around to some of that, but I just can't get on board with this as some sort of massively right-wing manipulated event.
Well, I'm not saying it's massively manipulated, but what I'm saying is the next time I'm making people aware of this. The next time a video comes out and it is of Sarah Palin and it is kind of outlandish and ridiculous and circus-like, check to see the channel and check to see the origins of it. And I wouldn't be surprised if it all comes back from a GOP source. That's what I'm saying.
Then that would be that. The only way that I can make that work for me, David, is if it is some sort of GOP dirty trick. Because you know Nixonian stuff, yeah, they still do that.
Mm-hmm.
It's the word is rat followed by the letter F and the other three fun ones, you know rat puck. That phrase was invented during the Nixon administration. It's how you take down a political opponent without having to take down a political opponent via dirty tricks. I'm not trying to be dense here.
Yeah.
I can't make the connection.
Well, what I'm saying is if they keep doing stories like this, and I brought this up before, there's going to be a revolt on the media really, really strong like you've never seen before. Almost like a Leave Sarah Alone campaign. And what I'm saying is this all...
Well, and certainly, you know, certainly that certainly the Fox clip that we played early in the program is evidence of that. Oh, I think she did it on purpose, like, to make fun of the people who use teleprompters. But, you know, that's like the Sarah Palin teleprompter BS, okay?
Yeah.
All the business about how... she said, you know, she had to do her speech at the RNC convention. She had to do her speech, because the teleprompter broke. Remember when she made that claim?
Right.
Well, there's only one problem. There were thousands of people there that were reading the whole thing word for word off the teleprompter as it was rolling past her. Because you know those teleprompter, you can see both ways.
Right. I understand your point, but what I'm saying is I think a lot of more people should pay attention to where all these Sarah Palin clips originate from. I'm telling you, I'm going on gut instinct.
Well, I think
fishy to me, Bob. It's looking really, really fishy to me. And just the way, just the way the cameras were set up too. I want to know.
But David, that was a pool feed. You know, C-SPAN was there, CNN was there. people were rolling, and when you're in an event like that, everybody doesn't get to set up their camera. It's a pool feed. It all comes out, and there's a box, and you plug into the box, and everybody goes from the box. Remember when we said, oh my God, what? The Fox News has the rights to the pool to run the pool feed from the DNC in Denver. Remember that?
Right.
Only because otherwise it would be wall to wall cameras and you wouldn't get any people in the room. Now, on the other hand, something being pointed out by David in Tennessee is that it's not at all unlikely to think that the right wing went into damage control mode the minute that they saw her read it, because we all saw it at the same time.
Right.
And they started spinning. Look, we know how Fox works. You know, Gretchen Carlson didn't just come up with that. Fox and Friends in the Morning is not an ad-libbed program.
Right.
So that. This one I can't get down with. I think she really is that dim. I think she really is that inarticulate, and I think that she, as was said earlier, I think she really is a granny trapped in a 16-year-old cheerleader's mind trapped in a granny's body.
Well, Bob,
I mean, read the poem, Lift America's Spirits, and it goes right in time with her stroking her leg.
Her other hand probably said, and also, but I'll just leave you with this. My main point is all of these videos, where they originate from, these channels that instantly pop up. A lot of people who just get on board with it, they should track it back right to the source. That's what I'm saying, though.
Yeah, but we know what the, I mean. Okay, it's a little bit weird that a marketing group is involved with this.
Yeah.
But by the same token, anybody with a DVR or a TiVo or whatever could do the same thing. It's all within the technology, and then later the photograph of the hand is actually a still photograph, if I understand correctly.
I get what you're saying, but if it was to come out later on that a big publicity firm was behind this to make Sarah the clown of the media or something like that, I wouldn't be surprised by it. That's what I'm saying.
But the thing is, if that came out, whoever touched it. Whoever was in even remote contact with it would be taken down with it. Because that's Nixonian dirty tricks.
I hear what you're saying.
I think maybe what happens is we've been conditioned to look for the dirty trick. But sometimes things are as they seem. And with that woman, I think what you see is what you get.
Well, then, Bob.
If they had wanted her to, she would have stood up and played flute for $100,000. Because this whole thing is a money dodge for her. $67,000 was spent by Sarah Pack buying her books through HarperCollins, who in turn wrote her a check. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
This is $100,000. She says we're going to plow it back into the movement. Well, the movement is Sarah. You know, we speculated some last week about, you know, why are the MB twins not there? Why, you know, batshit crazy Michelle Bachman and batshit crazy Marsha Blackburn? Why aren't they there? Well, they were there because Sarah sucks all the air out of the room.
Right.
I mean, my God, she is so challenged that they. Look at the format. She was sitting being tossed softballs by a wingnut millionaire defense lawyer from Nashville. She knew the questions in advance, David.
Mm.
This is, I mean, that's how these things work. She knew what the questions were, and she still had to write crib notes on her hand. She's that goddamn dumb.
I hear what you're saying, Bob. I hear what you're saying.
I mean, if anybody wants to look at the shenanigans and the machinations, that's what that was. Sterling silver $89 teabag pendants for sale outside.
That's a good racket.
That's a great. That's a, as Bill Hicks would say, that's a big dollar. Oh, bald eagle T-shirts made in China. Oh, that's a great dollar.
And you know what? Just to end it on this, I bet you that wasn't even real silver. It was silver from China.
Yeah, that may actually be cadmium or something. Oh, what?
Yeah.
Cadmium. Every Easter, I buy me one of them cadmium eggs. Jesus. I know.
Well, Bob, I'm going to let you get to other callers.
All right, David, take care.
All right, later.
Later. Bye now. Pop culture correspondent David calling from Maine, and we roll onward here. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Garrett, what's up?
Nah, well, who dat?
Yeah.
That I'm sorry, but that onside kick was the most awesome Super Bowl play ever. And I've been watching them for, that was my, jeez, freaking, oh, almost 20 years now watching the Super Bowl that I can remember.
Yeah, I've watched a few more than that, and yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, last year's was pretty exciting, but that one play.
They've been actually, as the commercials have gone to complete garbage, the Super Bowls, the quality of the games has gotten better.
Oh, do you remember when the games were really, well, what was it? The Niners and the Chargers. Yawn.
Oh, God. Well, the second Super Bowl I watched was 24. Granted, my favorite team was 49ers, so I was a happy boy that day. But, oh, my God, they set so many records that day because it was such a beat down to the Broncos. I mean, yeah. I mean, they were bad. 23 and 25 were like, what happened there? Those ones were good. Now it's like, okay, they're good games all year in and year out. It's like, okay. But, you know, the NFL might be having some labor issues after next season, so who knows?
Yeah, it's collective bargaining time, isn't it?
Yeah, and they've already started talking trash.
Yeah, but look, they've got real issues. I mean, there are 50 something former NFL players out there who are living at or near poverty, whose bodies are broken beyond repair, who have no health care.
Yeah, I mean, and that's a big, I mean, for the former players, it's a big issue. And, for, I mean, when you get down to it, the union is concerned because those, I mean, now that the brain stuff is hitting, they know big time.
Well, and even the NFLPA, the NFL Players Association, Garrett, those guys are not blameless in this current scenario with retired players.
Oh, yeah. Oh, certainly.
You know, all we see in the headlines is that, you know, Joe Schmucko signed who quarterbacks the hapless whomevers signed a $42 million contract. We don't see the story of the left guard who.
Well, yeah, or like this offensive tackle for the Seahawks. He just officially called it a career today. He hasn't played. He messed up his knee or something in 2008. He hasn't played since. Think about that. You know that guy probably going to need some health coverage.
Yeah, and see, that we're not talking about any guaranteed money either.
Yeah.
That's.
He would, but, yeah, I mean, and the thing is, though, is that the owners didn't like how Tagliabue and Gene Upshaw were too close, you know, too buddy-buddy. So now they're looking to, now that there's a new commissioner and a new, rather young head of the union, they're looking to, it's going to get ugly.
Well, if it does so and it takes care of the players that aren't getting taken care of, If it takes a strike to do that, I say you strike.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, because frankly, there is an active union owes as great a debt to its pensioners as it does to its active members.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing is that you've got guys like Ditka that are pushing for it hard. Ditka and Merrill Hodge, I mean, who are on ESPN, mind you, that are both pushing for it very hard. I mean, Merrill Hodge had, you know, he knows more than a thing or two about concussions, and, well, Ditka played, you know, back when all the fingers and, you know, you just got totally gnarled up back when Ditka played, so they know very well that what's going on.
Yeah, and consider you know, there's some real management issues, as is being pointed out to me by David from Tennessee. The teams, okay, for the 2011 season, the teams get $5 billion.
Yeah.
Is that per team? I don't know, but there's.
I think it's the TV
money, but that goes to management. You know, that's not everybody getting a chunk of a chunk.
Yeah, that's what that's $5 billion is split amongst the 32 teams, what have you. Even Stevens, and then, you know, plus there's, I mean, the problem, of course, the thing, I mean, and plus, you know, the ticket, they get the ticket sales, and some of the smarter teams get own the stadium and get the concessions, their stake in the concession sales and those stupid personal seat licenses that they made, you know, to force people, the bribe, you have to pay us for the right to buy tickets, you know, and stuff like that. I mean, they all make a pretty good amount of money.
Yeah, that's a lot of money. When you divide it, what was it, 32 teams?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's scary money. I mean, it's like.
And the question, you know, is there not enough money in there to put up a viable? Because, to be fair, NFL players don't have the health. They have some of the same health problems you and I will have. But they have health problems that you and I will never dream of.
Oh yeah, the head trauma thing is going.
The spine stuff and the hip stuff and the knee stuff and just the general orthopedic stuff.
Yeah, they take wear and tear. Those guys take wear and tear that's above and beyond.
When they're old and they're retired, you know, they wind up getting knee replacements like we get tetanus shots.
Yeah,
if they can afford them.
Yeah, I mean, Namath is like on. I think he's like on his second. I think he's like on a second set of fake knees. I mean, to use a famous example. I mean, seriously, that's some heavy wear and tear there.
Yeah, I mean, put this in context. Strike or no strike, those teams get paid that $5 billion. That's like saying there's a strike by the UMWA, and the coal company keeps getting paid whether there's any coal moved or not.
Yeah, that's the worst part about it. They'll still, since it's guaranteed, unless there's provisions in there. I mean, the networks are stupid, but they're not that stupid. You know, unless there's provisions in there to protect the league in case of a strike or lockout or work stoppage, they get all the teams get all of that money. That's why, you know, granted, we all the meme is always to talk about how these sports league players, you know, make way too much. But, you know, in the NFL's case, it's, I don't know, a lot of that annual salary has, you are, if they're smart enough and they invest it right, I mean, will just end up going treating themselves without health care because the country is not looking, it's not looking like we're getting nationalized health care anytime soon.
Frustratingly, yeah. No.
Yeah, I mean, and the thing is that, I mean, really when you get down to it, the Steelers and the Saints players are about the few about the only pockets of really hardcore liberalism. I mean, you know, the Niners, you know, I think they are one of the teams that pump more money into the Democrats, but they can't be seen as conservative in the San Francisco area. That'd be like suicide. And they're already in trouble with this. They're already having their fights with the city over replacement stadium.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, there's so much. I just learned, and David in Tennessee is a font of information on this. If you're an older, retired NFL player, get this. It's mind-blowing. You're an old, retired NFL player, and you want the benefits of the NFL retiree plan. They must, you know, can't carry it in, can't mail it in. They must apply online. Now,
I'm sorry, but I,
you know, how many crippled 54-year-old former offensive tackles at this point in time are necessarily internet savvy? I mean, please.
My father is totally not savvy. I mean, my mother is, but that's because that's her job. She's been using computers since they were black and white, you know, IBM computers with green text on black screens. I mean, you know, that's the main reason. And she's not anywhere near as savvy as, certainly not anywhere near, like, say, the news ninjas or anything like that. I mean, the fact is that it's, the computer is a generational gap. Especially for, you know, the football players. I mean, they don't necessarily, yeah, they get time for new toys and stuff, but, you know, when this stuff was, if they're of that generation when the computers were coming of age, they probably had their minds on other issues, you know, like raising a family and all that. I mean,
yeah, it's been known to happen.
Yeah, I mean, oh, it's only the guys from the 90s that have played to the 90s to the present that are, I would say, as a general rule, are computer savvy amongst any of the athletes. And then it's pushing it because some, you know, you always have your Luddites that are like, I don't want to use the internet, you know, for whatever reason. And it doesn't, you know, not big on technology. More power to them. It shouldn't be. I mean, but hopefully it doesn't get so cartoonishly played in the media. You know,
yeah, you live, like, in Las Vegas. What are you going to bet on that?
Not a damn cent.
See?
Speaking of Vegas, Vegas did actually kind of make out fairly decent.
Well, you know, the last I saw, the over on the game was 54.5. And my thought was, I wouldn't touch it. I was predicting a relatively low scoring game.
Well, the thing is that the smart money was on the Colts. Some of it was, you know, mixed on the over or under, but the smart money was on the Colts.
See, I always go back to, what was that? Was that the Packers and the Patriots? The one where Vegas, where the bookies took such a bath, you know, they were fixing the line all the way up to kickoff because they couldn't get the money right.
I can't remember it, but there was one year.
No, that was the Rams. It was the Rams and the Patriots, and the Rams were runaway favorites.
Yeah, I think that was the year because there was one year where Vegas like totally cheated us out of like this. The sacks, because my father did like a couple, like a parlay card, which has grown exponentially since that point, but he did a parlay card and one of them was sacks. And the casinos counted less sacks because my father took the over, less sacks because they were hammered so hard. Less sacks than they were officially in the football.
Well, I'll never forget that Super Bowl just because literally, Vegas was manipulating the line all the way up to kickoff because the Rams were such prohibitive favorites. Everybody was taking the Rams, and they couldn't get the money right.
Well, I mean, yeah, that's not unheard of. I mean, when there's a big favorite like that, they'll work that line. just to do it. I mean, this year it went from the highest the Colts were favored was 6 to, and it booted itself down to 4.5 here, but that's because it was pretty fair enough action on the game. I mean, because especially towards the end, all the sentimental bet. Because that's the thing, the casinos would have made out like frickin' bandits this year had there not been so many sentimental voters go in so many. In fact, they lost a lot of profit from people just straight up betting the money line or this, just a straight up, you know, against the point spread for the Saints, not betting like the parlay cards where they make tons of money. The parlay cards are frickin', you know, all the prep bets, they make tons of money on that because it's all random junk. I mean, first score, first down, coin toss, who wins, who, you know, result of the kickoff. There was one as to, I mean, there's even a furniture store in town that got into it. They were going to offer from Wednesday to 2 p.m. our time before the game. If you bought furniture during that period and the opening kickoff of the game was a run back for a touchdown, you know, you'd get your furniture for free. And they've been doing it for a few years now, actually. Because one year they had to pay out like $50 million. When the one year it happened, they had to pay out $50 million worth of furniture.
Nice.
Yeah, but the place has all been, even before they started the promotion, the place was prominent in town, but I mean, it's a big PR thing for them, but it's just how it is here. I mean, but yeah, Vegas didn't get hurt by it. In fact, they're kind of, in retrospect, they're probably kind of upset that the Saints people, you know, voted straight up instead of doing parlays.
Well,
especially since there were a couple, there was at least one of the million-dollar bet fools, the rich folk that bet on it, at least one of them that bet like a couple million dollars. Supposedly he announced that he wasn't hedging his bets. So just think about that.
See, I don't bet on football. I don't bet on anything that doesn't involve me holding either dice or cards.
I dabbled with doing the picks from while I was high school. My father would place the bets, and I realized I just think too emotionally.
But I would not have been uncomfortable taking the Saints last night in an underdog role.
Yeah.
No matter what the line is, just because, I guess just because. Because it seemed like the thing was so charged that there was a far greater likelihood it would be a game that was the game that was decided by a field goal, in which case, you know, you wouldn't, in which case Indy wouldn't have covered.
That's how I thought it was leaning towards it being a fairly high scoring game. Based on their reputations, but I was,
with New Orleans kicker sitting there making 40-yarder after 40-yarder after 40-yarder, I'm thinking, how does this not end on a field goal?
Yeah,
just because of the mythic qualities of it. But that was taken care of.
Especially since poor Matt Stover, I mean, in for Vinatieri, I mean, poor guy. He's a great kicker in his day, but his leg is done. I mean. He was an emergency acquisition. I mean, in his career, pretty much over. But the poor guy. I mean, the one long kick that he did try. Granted, it ultimately didn't make a difference. But it's like you could tell. I mean, I was.
And that's the thing, you know, when you're an NFL team and you have to go get a kicker, that may be the toughest position of all to fill on an emergency basis because. Basically, you start going to old meat markets and bars and because that's, you know, where do you get a kicker?
Yeah, I mean, because the Saints at the start of the season, when Miss Hartley, their kicker yesterday, when he was like, he started the season injured, and oh, they got somebody. They had somebody hanging around as their kicker. One of the older guys. I think like almost. I don't think it was Morten Andersen or whatever, but he. I mean, they kept a hold of him mainly for sentimental reasons as long as they could, and he was a coach, a kicking coach, up to right now.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, Garrett, I got to run, but it's been great hearing from you, and, you know, it had to be exciting out there, too.
Oh, yeah. I mean, watched it with members of my family. I mean, we didn't even hear the Tebow ad because we pretty much all universally couldn't stand the guy.
Well, and that's like Lee writing from Austin to say that he just thought Mary Steenburgen had gotten really old.
You know, as I posted it in chat room when that was first mentioned, Steenburgen might have to sue for that. Character defamation. I'm sorry.
Hey. Not on one of your fellow hornies. Now quit that.
I'm just saying she might, you know. I don't approve of it. I'm just saying if she realizes that happened, you know, does a Google search and like, what? I'm not that crazy religious.
Oh, okay. Cattiest moment of the show thus far. That woman looked like her hair had been been colored with a Sharpie.
maybe Sarah Palin Sharpie.
Yeah. Later, Garrett.
See you later, Mom.
Bye. Oh, that was mean. And onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Brian from New Hampshire.
What's happening, Brian?
How are you? I didn't watch even the one play of the. I don't have cable TV since May of 2000. I don't. I didn't watch the stupid bowl. I mean, the Super Bowl. I didn't. I used to like the Saints as a kid, and I'm glad they won, especially after the hurricane. But I didn't watch it. And I'm wondering if you can we only talk about the football game or no?
We've talked about a whole heck of a lot more than the football game so far.
Yeah, about the healthcare, that kind of thing. But I think I'm wondering if you brought this up or anybody's brought this up on your show late last week, Wednesday and Thursday night, Mike Malloy show. He was talking about a January 27th House Homeland Security hearings that they went on for about 2 or 3 hours. It's on the internet too. I have the URL address for it. And basically, you know, regarding the Flight 253, the underwear bomber, then whatever the name they're using for it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Abdul Muttalib.
Yeah, whatever. It's not the joke about this, though. The fact is, if that kid had gotten away with, if that plane had gone up, they'd still be crucifying Obama until they had run him out of the White House and they had the more pliable Biden to work with or something like that. Yeah, that just we have to keep that in mind. The fact is, according to that hearing, and Mike Malloy brought this up repeatedly on Wednesday and Thursday night show of last week, the undersecretary from the State Department, Mr. Patrick Kennedy, and somebody from the Mr. Leiter from the National Counterterrorism Council, the NCTC, all these acronyms, But they both said, but namely the State Department official said, going back to November of 2009, you know, that happened December 25th, 2009, the attempted bombing of the plane over Detroit. Going back to early November 2009, the State Department was all set that they were going to revoke that kid's visa, the Nigerian kid. They had already heard from his father and all that. They had enough information to say that they knew this guy was hanging out with an extremist terrorist in Yemen.
Oh, they had it.
They were going to revoke him, but he couldn't say in an open session there, this guy, Mr. Kennedy from the State Department, said that somebody from they go through the usual with the law enforcement and all the intelligence agencies, and they go through them, and they say they're going to revoke this guy's visa. He can't travel by air anywhere, or he can't come into the United States. And the intelligence people, that he wouldn't give the name in open session, but somebody or some group of people from the intelligence officials said to Mr. Kennedy and the State Department, you do not revoke this young man's visa. We're following him. We're monitoring him. We're trying to break up a bigger network. So they knowingly let this kid take these flights. They have it down to the days of the flight that they knowingly they let him take these flights knowing that he was a dangerous guy. Our intelligence people, they stopped the State Department from stopping him from traveling, and yet the Republican-run rightist media is trying to make it into a State Department error and the Obama administration error, when on December 22nd, 2009, also, Bob, They say Barack Obama met with our intelligence chiefs. He's saying, I'm very much concerned about all the signs are pointing to an Al-Qaeda attack sometime during the holiday season, especially Christmas, New Year's. I want you to cut, to stop anything, to knock these guys down before they get. And yet they let this young guy, this dangerous guy, fly on that flight, 253. And look at the Voice of America News here, Bob. VOANews.com. You know, I wish I had your baritone voice to read this off, just the title, but I don't. But it just says, intelligence officials say underwear bomber should never have boarded plane.
Yeah. And I mean, it goes beyond what you're saying here. At least the official version is that the guy, there was no talk of a visa, there was no talk of a passport. He was escorted to that desk and said, yeah. This guy is from Sudan, he doesn't have a passport, and we let people fly like that all the time.
No, they don't. And Mike Malloy was saying that they were leaking these phony news stories. The CIA was the intelligence agency, some groups were leaking these phony stories about this, and the British, they refused to let him fly into their country, but they hadn't revoked his visa. He didn't have a visa for Britain, traveling to Britain apparently anyways, but he did have one for Holland and one for, you know, as perhaps another country in Europe and of course Nigeria. That's ostensibly his citizenship, I would believe. But the fact is that they covered this up and they leaked all kinds of phony stories, Bob, and it's getting to, you know, that this hearing, I can give the URL address of it about the Homeland Security. It's chaired by Benny Thompson. And these gesticulating Joey Fisher's Republicans, Bob, they're still trying to blame Obama for this. They're still trying to make him look, which he doesn't look anywhere near as dumb and unconcerned and uncaring and cruel as George W. Bush from at least September 11th, September 12th,
right, because onward. Because Brian,
Obama was warning our intelligence people.
There is a very, very significant difference between the two situations.
Okay.
And the one is, as you've noted, Barack Obama was engaged.
Yeah.
The fact of the matter is,
he actually took the office very seriously.
He's taking the office seriously. He's taking his daily briefing seriously. On the other hand, look, in excess of 3,000 people died on September the 11th, 2001. Because President Vacation Boy was too busy cutting brush.
That
to read
the worst
to
day
read
in American history to me, Bob. That remains the worst day in our history.
Was too busy cutting brush to read a PDB entitled "Bin Laden Determined to Strike Inside U.S."
And then he tells the intel agent that told him that they gave him that full that said that Al Qaeda operatives were casing the Twin Towers in New York City and federal buildings in New York City and in Washington D.C., including the Pentagon. He says to him, "Okay, you covered your ass, you can leave now." And then he goes fishing for the rest of the day, or like you're saying, they're cleared brush for the rest of the day. That's not what a president's supposed to be doing when he gets that kind of, especially when he gets that kind of warning. It's disgusting, Bob. But what I want to say is, you know, you speak about the working class and that Battle of Blair Mountain. I still haven't gotten the book about the West Virginia, the mining history and all that. That's a great thing too. But also, I'm reading back over Howard Zinn. God love him. I'm reading back over A People's History of the United States, Chapter 12, The Empire and the People. It talks about February 1897, the blowing up of the Maine in Havana Harbor, Cuba.
Right, yeah, that's very, I love that book. God
yeah.
help me,
oh,
I do.
Oh, my God. They talk about, and this is what the American worker, they knew that the Knights of Labor, the American Federation of Labor, spoke against the idea of annexing Hawaii, which President McKinley proposed in 1897, and then they blew up the Maine February 1897. Samuel Gompers of the AFL wrote to a friend, "The sympathy of our movement with Cuba is genuine, earnest, and sincere. But this does not for a moment imply that we are committed to certain adventurers who are apparently suffering from hysteria," end quote. It goes on from the explosion of the Maine in February. But, and then Roosevelt took over after McKinley, and that, our American imperialism was often, and the 2 million Filipinos died as well because of it after, and, Cuba, the Battle of San Juan Hill, all that. And but they used to have something like Tom Hartman's been saying for years. They used to have something in our business columns in our newspapers called a labor column. you know, made and written, because they, these people are, they're far more illiterate than this. It's just so ridiculous the way they go to the lowest common denominator, and below that, even a couple of standard deviations for the Sarah Palin overgrown girl there. But the, now, they used to have labor columns, and they're talking about the labor journals, the official organ of the Connecticut AFL, the Craftsman, talking about the warned about the hysteria working up by the sinking of the Maine. That they can apply to September 11th, could apply to Flight 253, but they're talking about the sinking of the Maine. Quote, a gigantic and cunningly devised scheme is being worked ostensibly to place the United States in the front rank as a naval and military power. The real reason is that the capitalists will have the whole thing, and when any working men dare to ask for the living wage, they will be shot down like dogs in the street. And then some unions, here we go, Bob, like the United Mine Workers, called for U.S. intervention after the sinking of the Maine, but most were against the war. The treasurer of the American Longshoremen's Union, Bolton Hall, wrote a peace appeal to labor, which was widely circulated, and includes this paragraph. If there is a war, quote, if there is a war, you will furnish the corpses and the taxes, and others will get the glory. Speculators will make money out of it. That is, out of you. Men will get high prices for inferior supplies, leaky boats, for shoddy clothes and pasteboard shoes, and you will have to pay the bill. And the only satisfaction you will have is the privilege of hating your Spanish fellow workmen, who are really your brothers, and who have had as little to do with the wrongs of Cuba as have you have. End quote. And then it just, it goes off from there, the labor journals, and just the working class guy get always gotten a lot better than, yeah, you know, like, God rest his soul, John Murtha was always connected to that kind of person in Pennsylvania. They tried to get him into some past corruption, so-called corruption, and when he met with, what was it, that Arab gate or whatever, that when he met with that phony Arab, he was asking the question that any public serving congressman should be asking. Well, what kind of jobs are you going to bring to my district? How much are you going to pay the workers? Are they going to be living wage jobs? Are they going to be, you know, whatever you're talking about, for the construction, whatever. Well, what kind of, you know, and how are they going to be paid? And what, you know, he's asking specifically for the good of his people and his congressional district. That's what he was doing, John Murtha. I don't know if there's other things that may be ethically or otherwise wrong, but he's still, the people that are connected to the actual people, it's like Howard Zinn, they don't have a voice in this national media anymore. Why not?
You just asked the
like 60, you. I mean,
you just asked the $64 question, Brian.
Yeah.
Why not? There's
John Kennedy had that kind. He was
that's
a rich,
an, but that,
was
is,
a
that
rich
is a more
guy.
That's a more easily answered question than perhaps it seems. Look, this and I'm not and this is not me being a smart ass to you. That is not my purpose.
No.
But this is relatively simple stuff.
It is.
The media in this country are owned, by and large, by about six multinational corporations.
Right. It's the same. It's simple but a sad, tragic equation.
It's beyond.
It's like trying to ignore the sun every day, but it's a fact.
It is a fact. And what's more, if we had any sort of a healthy respect for law, or perhaps the Sherman Act, we would. That situation would not obtain in this country.
Right. And also, if we had any respect for history, we'd just go in with Howard Zinn there with his great book. It's just simple history going back to 1999 and 2000. Bill Clinton and then his incoming president, who should have been mathematically, honestly, if there was an honest election, he would have been president. They had the budget surpluses both those years. They didn't have to touch a penny of the Social Security surplus, but they stole it for this inbred blue blood King wannabe George.
But
w.
remember,
Bush.
But if you're going to ask the media question, and I'm not one of these people who spits on the ground at the mention of Bill Clinton's name, I am not that guy.
No, he's the best Republican president we've had as far as I can.
Well, I mean, you hear that a lot, but I'm not even going to go there.
Eisenhower, I don't.
But the fact of the matter is, you cannot get around the very, very simple reality that in 1996, Bill Clinton signed, and frankly, the Telecommunications Act of 1996, and I have yet to read anything anywhere, Brian, that suggests that the Republicans had anywhere approaching the necessary numbers to override a presidential veto.
That's right.
And okay, are you working with me here?
Yep.
So we have to at least let Bill Clinton have the credit or blame
absolutely,
to which he is entitled for some portion of this mess.
And you're absolutely right. You've repeatedly said, but you've got to repeat it too, Bob. You're absolutely right that Telecommunication Act, the decision to go along with signing that, it was even more disastrous than his signing that Phil Gramm 1999-2000 bank massive deregulation bill that allowed those investment bankers to destroy the economy in the meltdown of 2007-2008.
Absolutely.
That the Glass-Steagall Act that was overturned with that signing. That was this telecommunication area is much more disastrous. It continues.
Well,
the Nazis used the radio is the same way Sarah Palin using the radio.
I can come up with four things, Brian.
Repeat the lies.
Terrible things that happened under Bill Clinton's presidency. The repeal of Glass-Steagall.
Right.
All right. The Telecommunications Act
yep.
of 1996, the so-called welfare reform,
right,
and finally, most permanent, most favored nation trading status with China. Those
absolutely.
Four things are, within those four things, lay the seeds of, well, okay, five. Let's make it a nice round five. NAFTA.
Yep.
Those five things, were enough to gut the working class, and having gutted the working class, make sure that when they got nice and poor, there was no appreciable safety net for them. And should they begin to bitch
yep.
and complain about it, that there would be no outlet for their words. Again, and I know you're sick of Sarah Palin, you're sick of Pam Tebow, but I'm not offering the Pam Tebow thing as something about Tim Tebow. I have never seen, okay, you know, you're talking about this hearing that isn't getting, the hearings that didn't get a lot of play. Well,
yeah.
that too is a function of failed media in this country. But if you want a glaring in your face, poke you in the nose example of the dead, rotting corpse of journalism in this country, all you need do is look at the Pam Tebow story.
About the Philippines. The
Philippines
yeah,
and six
right.
different reasons why she had to abort little Jesus Timmy. All of that crap.
My psychiatrist, he's a great Harvard educated, that the real Harvard they call is not the extension school for nuts like me, but the real Harvard Medical School. She's a brilliant woman. Filipino lady there, I believe some of her ancestry was Chinese settlers in the Philippines, but they're a strongly Catholic nation. I don't know what they're talking about, that abortions were so available in the first place there.
Right, and that's, but that, but that's only
that.
Part of it. You know, anybody who sits, well, okay, I went to high school at a time when we still had these things called high school newspapers, and we still had these things called journalism class.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, great idea.
That's a great patriotic idea. That's
and like day one of freshman journalism one class, the lecture goes like this. Journalism seeks to honestly answer a very few little relatively simple questions. Who, what, when, where, why, how, and occasionally how much.
Yeah, and that it mainly
now,
that it's supposed to be a search for the truth is
actually I was lucky yeah. I was lucky in the teachers that I had, Brian, because I had teachers who would look at me and say, "We are not going to talk about truth. We are going to talk about facts because the two
yeah.
frequently diverge."
You're right, especially yeah, and when it's a
and
written
so,
word or any kind of media, they can.
And
they
so
can.
If you want, I mean,
yeah.
I hate to cast this in this kind of light, Brian, but I kind of gotta. But
sure.
If a poor woman who had had a troublesome pregnancy,
right,
and had had to abort that pregnancy, had told it in as cheery a way as that ad was told.
Uh-huh.
and that ad had been accepted for play on the Super Bowl, that woman would have been subjected to a level of scrutiny that we don't even reserve for Supreme Court justices anymore, Brian.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They would, the media would have savaged her ass asking those who, what, when, where, why, how, and how much questions.
Right.
And you know what?
And
wait.
Sarah Palin Pantibo wouldn't have had a comeback.
Right, but you know what? It would have been okay for them to do that in my book.
That's right.
Because that is the job of journalism.
Okay.
But because, let me just finish.
Okay, then I'm going to give a URL for the rest of you fellow citizen journalists out there. Then you can get rid of me for the night.
there's no hurry.
Okay.
But let me just finish.
Okay.
But because Pam Tebow was saying that it was all about her faith in God, we couldn't touch her. There was not a paid professional journalist in this country who dared lay a finger on her because the right wing and the evangelical Christianity movement has become so godforsaken good at saying we're being persecuted just like our Lord and Savior.
But Bob, what if it had been like, you know, there's a lot of there's kids from all backgrounds and they're great. I think it's the multicultural aspect of America is one of our greatest strengths over the centuries. It really is, in spite of our sad history in many ways. But what if it had been a Hindu American woman who could? She have a star football player. She might be a devoted follower of the god Hindu god Vishnu, a god that goes back before even the god of the Old Testament,
sure.
I believe.
Ganesh, any of them.
Ganesh, yeah. And if she, because she's going by that, she would have the same type of story at the base that she was somehow in the Philippines or somewhere, and she went through the same situation as Pam Tebow, except she did it from a Hindustani point of view on the situation. Could American media allow that?
No. If whatever organization had paid twice as much money, that ad would not have run.
That's right.
My overall thing is, please see this within the framework in which it naturally exists, Brian, and that is the framework of failed journalism, failed media in this country. I don't give a tinker's damn about. Well, I do. I despise her. I wouldn't pee on her. I wouldn't pee in her mouth if her guts were on fire, Pam Tebow. But the fact of the matter is, this isn't about that. This is about the fact that journalists did not do journalists' job in story after story after story after story, all of which turned out to be wrong. And I personally think there was some. Now David was talking about media manipulation. That's where the media manipulation was, because the ad that ran was not the story we were told was going to be run. But anyway, in story after story after story, Pam Tebow's hagiographic story of the miraculous birth of St. Timmy was repeated without question. And what I mean by that, and let's just take a moment for a little journalism class here.
Yeah.
It was said, Pam Tebow had a difficult pregnancy in 1986 when she was carrying Tim. She was advised by a doctor in the Philippines to have an abortion because of the problems she was having and that the fetus could be born malformed. Now, all of those are statements, are assertions of, and what did I say? I was taught we go after facts, not truth.
Right.
All of those are assertions of fact. And any time a person is out there asserting things as fact, it is only right and proper that someone who is literally a member of the guardian of freedom, which the Fourth Estate is supposed to be,
has
absolute duty to check it out. I mean, my God, there's an organization out there called factcheck.org. If Barack Obama says, I tied my left shoe before my right shoe this morning, factcheck.org will be on him like a duck on a damn June bug and as like as not say, well, you know, there's a 50% chance he tied his right shoe. Nowhere were they to be found.
Yeah. It's the same thing, like they never... And they did. They were right there in the studio. That Steffi Stephanopoulos. They didn't do the just a quick follow up and just quick correction. stern correction is what was needed when the people like Giuliani and Mary Madeline and what's the former press secretary, that Dana Perino, she drinks more coffee than I do. As she talks even faster than Brian does. It was Dana Perino when she was the press secretary. Press secretary.
Yeah, but she makes a lot less sense, Brian.
Maybe long for the days of the Einstein of the press secretary's office there, Scotty McClellan, compared to her. But no, these three people said that the 9/11 did not happen under George W. Bush.
Absolutely.
They let them, the interviewers right there, let these people get away with it, these so-called American leaders get away with it. It's disgusting. This Homeland Security, it's about a couple hours of people. You can fast forward to the Republicans if you get too nauseous. It's just the URL address is at, or the Homeland Security, look up U.S. House of Representatives, but http://homeland.house.gov/hearings/index.asp?, then capital I, capital D, equals 234. And that's the URL. And if you go to the U.S. House of Representatives website, too, you just click on the Homeland Security hearing page there, that tab, and you can get right to that, too. You can find that if people have time. But it was like another, you know, we couldn't connect the dots. More theater for the Republicans to get enraged at Barack Obama for something that he was doing his utmost.
That Negro is trying to blow us up.
253.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's ridiculous, Bob, but I'll let you go. And, like I say, I'm glad for, you could say who dat. I say it with my New England accent, and it just doesn't have the same meaning.
Well, I certainly understand, but what is the New Hampshire translation?
Well, who dat, it'll be, it could be, in some parts of New Hampshire, they do sound, it's almost like Maine, you know, down east Maine is way up north in Maine, actually. And they'd say, oh yeah, it'd be something like that. It'd be something like, are you putting me on? Oh, you're shitting me. That's another term. Yeah, you're shitting me, pal. You're trying to tell me that's the truth. You know, that's what like a big Louisiana, New Orleans lineman would say. You're thinking you can come on and take out my little Drew Brees, little brother there? Who dat? You know, you're shitting me.
Thanks, Brian. Have a good night.
Bye bye.
Bye now.
Bye bye.
With translations from the New Hampshireese. That's Brian calling from New Hampshire. Hey, let's keep it rolling. Welcome to the program. Hello? Hello?
Bob?
Yes.
Oh, my God. It's Janny.
Janny, how are you, dear?
I'm just back from Haiti.
So you did get to make the trip?
Yes, I did.
Are you still employed?
Yes. It was an amazing trip. Oh, my God. I didn't actually make it out into the city, which is probably a good thing because it was painful enough just where I was. But, oh, my God.
Well, you are the first person to call this program who has actually seen any portion of Haiti. So please inform.
Well, I went with a group called Project MediShare, and they've been going there since 1994. It was founded by a doctor from the University of Miami, Barth Green. He's a neuro, not my forte. Cardiac is my forte. And Miami Children's has been sending nurses to, and basically they have like a peds tent, an adult tent, and an ER. I mean, it's very, very MASH nursing. I mean, it's very primitive. We were using like boxes of splints, and it was an amazing experience, you know? I mean, I've never been so excited to be home and have a sink.
How many people were you seeing a day, Janny?
Well, I was in charge of 15 patients by myself, and it wasn't. I'm normally a cardiac ICU nurse, and I normally have two patients that are critically ill. The patients that I had weren't necessarily critically ill. It was pretty much floor type patients. You know, they'd been most of the
they'd been stabilized. It was like a ward situation.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we had the capability of doing like a pediatric ICU. We had one patient that needed to be intubated and put lines in, but the following day everything was removed and he was sent out to the floor. But for the most part, the ICU was adult-type patients. And they weren't even ICU adult patients. They were like step-down patients. It wasn't, there was no real critical care nursing. Although, we did, there was a mother that was toxemic and gave birth to a baby when we were leaving off shift one night. And then the next morning when we came back, the baby ended up needing to be intubated. And the doctors had to hand bag the baby for like 6 hours because we didn't have a neonatal vent.
Oh, my God.
And we were trying to transfer the patient. Miami Children's was willing to take the patient. We ended up going to the press. Miami Herald came out and took pictures, and the New York Times was interested. But somehow some woman from Haiti showed up and ended up transferring the patient to a hospital like 30 miles away from us. And I saw her when I was leaving, and she said that the baby was going to live. So that was good. I mean, the problem we were having with her is she was, her dextrose was low and she couldn't maintain her temperature. And when you can't maintain your temperature as a neonate, you waste all this energy.
Right.
And I mean, it was really critical for a while. But I'm very happy everything worked out.
How many days were you there?
I was there for 4 days.
Are you considering going back?
Of course.
Of course.
But it's all volunteer time, so I have to arrange it so that, you know, I was a little tricky this time. I don't know if I'll be able to get away with that again. My hospital is one that's arranging the pediatric aspects over there. And I didn't actually go with my hospital. I went directly with the group that's providing the whole scene over there. My hospital is getting nurses from Delaware, DuPont Children's, I believe,
mm-hmm.
and they're having them come over for like 2 weeks. And
well, let me just ask this, Janie: were people being seen who needed to be seen? What was the wait like? What was it like in terms of need versus services available?
Well, it's what I mean. The hurricane. God, I keep wanting to say hurricane because we're so used to hurricanes. The earthquake happened on the 12th, so our hospital was kind of turning into just a regular hospital because technically, the reason we were there was for earthquake relief. So that would be for infected wounds. So technically we shouldn't be bearing children. And I think that, you know, word got out that we were there, and so people were just showing up and treating it like a regular hospital. So it should be interesting to see how that all changes. Because it's not there. I don't really know what to say to you about the wait. I know when we would get traumas, they would come in immediately. I mean, I don't really think that there was a long wait. Perhaps for like general, you know, I have a cut here or, you know, whatever.
Triage.
There might have been a wait, but, I mean, like, we had gunshot wounds, we had traumas, we had motor vehicle accidents. Because actually, the only reason I know that is because the PEDS tent, in the back of the PEDS tent was the OR. So I got to see everything that was going in and out of the OR.
Wow. And so where you were you within the UN compound? Or, I mean, you said you weren't out in
yes.
the city.
Yes, I was in the UN compound.
Any kind of an estimate on the number of people who were there delivering services?
Well, there are way too many doctors. We need definitely more nurses. I mean, my unit had, I think, 6 doctors and 5 nurses to cover probably 60 patients. And I mean, that it wasn't, they weren't critically, I mean, it was fine.
It wasn't impossible, but it wasn't comfortable either.
Well, I mean, we were working 12-hour shifts, and that heat and, you know, just the stress of the situation, and I think it would have been better to work 8-hour shifts and to have more nurses to cover that, and then maybe then we could go out and photograph the city.
Well, Janie, is the shortage of nurses that you experienced, is that an overall extension of the general lack of skilled nursing professionals that we're constantly told that this country suffers from?
I don't know.
I mean, was it in that kind of proportionality?
I don't really know how to answer that, because I don't know who's making the decisions about sending people here or to Haiti. I know that my hospital, I question some of the nurses that they've been sending. You know, I mean, when you send nurses that have worked at Miami Children's and have only worked at Miami Children's for 30 years, they tend to be a little bit more rigid, and I don't think you really need that in the field. And I think that caused some problems. So, I mean, I think it would be better to send younger nurses or just anyone who's flexible and can roll with the punches. Because some of the nurses that they sent were ICU nurses, and they were trying to treat it like an ICU. And, you know, I mean, the doctors would order one antibiotic. We would run out of that antibiotic, and then we would switch to another antibiotic. We would run out of that antibiotic, and then we would have to go to another antibiotic. So, I mean, you can't, there's nothing, you cannot take the states with you. As far as practicing.
Well, the reason I asked the question that I asked, Janie, is because we hear and read, and I read about it not just as a function of medicine, but as a function of labor, that one of the problems we have within the healthcare structure of the United States is that in an effort to cut labor costs and maximize profit, that the major healthcare corporations deliberately understaff their units so that nurses are worked harder at longer hours and wind up overextending themselves. You may remember back in the horror days of the Bush administration, when one of the few things that the Bush administration Labor Department actually did was to try to break nurses' unions, and the classic case on that was the Kentucky Nurses Association case, in which the Bush administration Labor Department alleged that if a nurse, in the course and scope of his or her duties, says to a CNA, for instance, "Would you go empty that wastebasket?" That de facto put that nurse into a position of being management and was therefore obliged to be removed from the roles of the union. And they won that case. And as a consequence of that, you've got, you know, you're putting an undue strain on an already stressed profession. And I'm just wondering, from what you've said about, you know, we had ICU nurses where we needed more general floor nurses, that kind of thing. I'm wondering if you can extrapolate out of the situation something to be said about the nature of the system here in its for-profit aspect as it exists.
Well, I think that it really depends on where you work, because part of the reason why I stay in Miami is because I do really like my hospital, and they do, you know, the assignments are very safe. You know, it is, I mean, I'm very happy here, and I was considering moving closer to my parents and family and all that, but I don't think that I could I think it really depends on where you are in the U.S. And a lot of hospitals are for profit. I think the best place to practice nursing probably is in California because they really protect the nurses there. And I know Schwarzenegger is at war with them. And, I mean, as far as, like, joining the union, when I lived in Minnesota, they had a big nursing strike, and they hired nurses to come in, and they paid them, like, $5,000 a week. And I think the strike lasted for a month. I mean, don't quote me on all the... I mean, it was a long time. I mean,
sure.
It was where they could pay their nurses a better salary. You know, I mean, it's all... Everything with these people is all smoke and mirrors. And I think that that's somewhat true at my hospital. And we have a new CEO, so it'll be interesting to see how my hospital progresses. Because when I first worked here, I mean, like for Nurses Week, they used to, you know, have a whole week of festivities. They were showering us with gifts, and during the year they would give employee satisfaction meals, and, you know, I mean, they were really, really good to us. Now the recession is the excuse for everything, so they're not doing that so much anymore. As far as the status of nursing in the U.S., I don't think it's really fair to equate that with Haiti, because Haiti is a complete volunteer type situation. So it's just people that want to go there. And I don't really know. I mean, I've been on a list to go with my hospital since day one. Why they haven't called me, I don't know. There's a lot of nurses that are ready to go that I don't know why my hospital isn't calling them. So I'm just advising everyone to go through Project MediShare.
And you know what? The situation is a horror, as I'm sure you experienced some of it, and a tragedy on a massive scale. But really, a moment like this, and tell me if I'm wrong, a moment like this really allows you to put all the pieces together for why you're in nursing in the first place, doesn't it?
Oh, my God. Those kids were so amazing. I don't speak a lick of Creole. Spanish, I can muddle my way through. Creole, forget it. Nothing makes sense. I can say merci. I can say bonjour. And that's about it. Every time I would give those kids their medicine, they would look at me and they would smile and they would say, merci. It broke my heart every single time. You know, I mean, it was just, they were so thankful for everything that you did. I mean, it was amazing. Mind you, they did take advantage of that and they would ask you for stuff. And I did totally hook up my patients with anything that I could hook them up with.
You're a nurse.
But, I mean, that's draining. You know, poverty, something really needs to be done about poverty, you know? I mean, oh, my God. The amount of money in the world in this day and age, and, I mean, that woman that I told you about that transferred the baby that we were handbagging for
yes.
6 hours, do you understand what that means,
yes,
handbagging?
What, like an Ambu bag or...
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, it's tedious, and it's not good. I mean, we had like these labs. The Air Force came in with these little iStat labs, which we have at my hospital, where you can do blood gases immediately and find out how they're breathing. You can find out electrolytes. You can find out hemoglobin. I mean, there's a lot of information that you can find out, glucose. And we ended up doing a gas on this baby, and then the Air Force had to leave. I don't know where they went. But hand bagging, it's not as precise as mechanical ventilation. You know, you can set the mechanical ventilation and...
Right, because it's subject to human muscular ability, human exhaustion, human fatigue. Exactly. Well, you mentioned...
And it can really screw up your pH balance, hand bagging. So, I mean, it's really important to be able to know what the pH balance, and it's really important to get a gas. And when the military left, you know, it was, you know, devastating. But when I was speaking to the woman who made the arrangements to transfer the baby out, she called Haiti a fourth world country, and she's from Haiti. And I thought that that was interesting because I guess I'd never really heard of a fourth world. Is that?
No, that's new to me too. The idea that there are nations, because third world means basically an un or underdeveloped nations, a nation that is so stricken in and mired in poverty and grief and misery that it can't even rise to the level of being undeveloped, that it is in fact negatively developed, is the way I would read that phrase. I mean, does that sound like what she was talking about?
I guess. One of my translators, they had, oh my God, this experience was so intense. The Scientologists were there like frickin' cockroaches.
Oh God, I read a little bit about that and I thought of you and I thought, dear God. With those yellow T-shirts and...
Oh, God. And then when I was leaving on the plane, some Scientologist was chatting me up, and I'm like, I really need to get some people in front of me because I am not sitting next to him on the plane ride home. Although they do have really good photographs on their site, so...
Did he tell you about his thetans?
Pardon me?
Did he tell you about his thetans or the offer to do an assessment of you or audit?
And I really had to bite my tongue, and I was thinking to myself every time I saw one of them, I thought, "Aren't you people anti-medicine?"
Well, no, that's
the
stuff.
What are you doing here?
Yeah, the stuff that I was reading on air about it when I guess at roughly the same time you were gone or going, what they talk about is, this goes back to some of that wacky BS from Tom Cruise, and it's been repeated again and again since. When I see people in trouble who need help, I see so many people trying to help, but I know that I'm a Scientologist, and really, I'm the only one who can help.
Okay, Ramtha.
There you go. I mean,
yeah, it was really creepy. And then the Mormons were there in droves, and of course, they were like one of our major translators.
But God, yeah, but I was going to say, compared to the Scientologists, suddenly the Mormons are normal.
I don't know. I lived in Utah. I don't know.
I knew you wouldn't let me get away with that.
Well, I mean, it was interesting because we had the translators, the Haitian translators, which, I'm like all over the place in like my language, I'm sarcastic, I'm witty, I play on words, and that doesn't really translate too well if you don't have a great grasp of the English language. And so I found that my translators, my Haitian translators didn't necessarily translate how I meant them to translate. And so then I, decided to use the Mormons.
Who are at least, yeah.
And then I found this anthropologist from some university in Quebec. And he kind of put things into perspective for me. He was really, really, really interesting. And I totally utilized him as much as I could because I knew he would give me the true translation. The Haitian translation, there's a lot of scamming going on. Desperate measures call for desperate, blah, 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 blah. So you didn't necessarily know exactly what you were getting across translating with the Haitian translators because there was a motive there. So my anthropologist, we ended up doing the cerebral, and I was like really interested in what he was studying and, blah, blah, blah. And I made some comment about, all these religious people here and the GMOs and there's a big map of Haiti that shows oil and minerals and, the U.S. is essentially occupying them. The U.S. was completely in charge of the airport when we landed.
Oh, no. Janie? Oh, I suspect a dead cell phone battery. I hope Janie calls back. Well, in the meantime, let's roll on. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. It's Dave up here in Northern California.
Hey, Dave.
I mentioned to you a week or so ago that I had been hoping to get our Unitarian Fellowship to show some support to the Horn and your program. I think there's a desperate need for voices such as your own to be available to people. I guess you're small. There are not many people that know that the Horn even exists, and I don't know how we can make that aware to everybody. But when I presented it at our Social Action Committee that I would like to see Unitarian Fellowships kicking into this cause, they wanted to investigate it. They want to look into it because I was the only one there that knew anything about it at all.
No, sure. We are far from being ubiquitous, Dave.
Yeah, I know. Well, you've got a wonderful program, and I think people should somehow be aware that this is an alternative that's desperately needed.
Well, you know, that's why I almost got to the point of begging people to go and comment on the article over at BuzzFlash, simply because, you know, the more comments you get, the higher it rises, and the higher it rises, the more likely it is to be noticed. And with that, you know, and so, you know, we're upwards of, I think, 40 comments or so by now, which I hope will only continue to grow. It's been out there for a few days yet, but as long as the thing shows activity, there's hope. And you know, the stuff that's being written there, Dave, is magnificent. Like I said, it's humbling to the point of tears sometimes. I can't believe that you guys write such wonderful stuff about what it is that we do here, and it means so much. That's one way to get the word out, and any way that we can, because frankly we can't afford $10,000 PR professionals.
Yeah, well, again, at the risk of appearing crazy, I'm personally not permitted to go on many sites, and as you may have noticed, I haven't been able to get into the chat room. It strikes me curious. You need both a username, and then you need to enter a 30-character password.
But the 30-character password is normal, as we discussed.
But with your site, no one, I never heard of any other site that has a
30-character. That's just how we've got it set up to try to forestall the daggum deluge of spam with which the thing deals.
Oh, well, because they're certainly not going to allow me to enter that, whether I cut and paste or type it out. It comes back as not acceptable, so I'm left with that problem.
Well, that's certainly frustrating, yes.
It is, because I can't get on any of the other ones. I used to be able to get on the Tom Hartman one, and when I'm there, I can also speak of getting advise people to go to the Horn when his program is going off the air, and a lot of people have done so and appreciated the suggestion. But I'm not able to do it. Maybe somebody there can find a way to. It's been down in the past. Ela once years ago managed to get me on the chat by just inventing a name and a password for me and then calling it to me. But I can't put my name out over the air, my phone number, I mean. But
right, I understand.
Maybe we'll come up with a way that we can do that. And I can't email you. I can't email you at Google or at Head On.
Okay. Sue, who moderates the chat room, said the chat service provider generates that confirmation number. Ask Dave to make sure his Java installation is updated. Because you're all set to go on this end. She sees your registration. Everything is right as rain. So all you need to do is maybe update your Java, and you're fine.
Oh, she can see my efforts to get on the chat?
Yeah, she can see your registration. It's rock solid.
Oh, be darned. Well, it sure doesn't let me do it.
I think what's going on is you've probably got a severely outdated version of Java.
Huh.
Because this thing is driven by Java. And Java is a platform, programming platform. And if your Java gets outdated, you know, this thing is constantly updated. And if your Java gets far enough out of date, you're going to be,
Well, I much like to see it where a person can simply go on a chat without having to enter any passwords at all, because when that
everybody under the sun.
Yeah, I know. You can be messed with in that way too.
Yeah.
Yeah. But for a long time, I know the head-on radio. I mean, Mark? He didn't have it where you had to come up with any passwords.
In this chat room, absolutely. There's always thing's always been password protected.
No, not that one. What was it, the radio Inside Scoop one?
Well, I didn't know he had a chat room over there, so I don't know anything about it.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's the nature of how, you know, this is something we have to pay for every year. In fact, the bill's due again. And
okay. Well, I'm afraid sometimes this toll-free number, and I suppose you charge for the minute on that, puts you on hold for an hour because you don't limit people to a two-minute call.
Right, and we pay for all those minutes.
Well, I hope that I can get our Unitarians. If anybody here, maybe somebody in your chat has a suggestion, we are the HUUF.org, and maybe just to give them some recommendation that it is indeed a worthwhile venture is to be supporting the horn.
Wonderful.
HUUF.org.
I really appreciate your efforts. I genuinely do.
Well, I wish I were in a better spot myself. There have been times, when I gave more in charity than I'm required to live off of today. But fate.
I understand. I do.
Yeah.
Well, I think either Sue has your email, Addie, or you have hers, and this should be this should be a solvable problem.
Well, I'd love to be back with you guys on a more regular basis and be able to share two-way communication there. And
well, we will make it happen. It's just going to take a little patience, but the first thing you need to do is update your Java. And once you've done that, all will be well. Dave, I think we've got Janie calling back in, and I want to let her finish her story. So we will talk soon, okay?
Okay, my friend.
All right. Thank you. Bye now. Dave calling from Northern California. I hope this is Janie. Is that you, Janie?
Yes.
Oh, hallelujah. Okay. I saw a call come in after we lost you, and the only thing I could do, that's why I asked you in chat, is that you? Because that way I knew which button to push.
Well, I don't know what happened. I'm sure that they needed to change the tape.
maybe tonight was the night that we burned up our first NSA hard drive.
No, it happens every once in a while. I don't know. I couldn't get into the chat room on Firefox. I had to go to Safari. So I don't know. I'm having electrical issues here, or I don't know. I have some sort of warp here.
Yeah, and the technology is far from perfect. I mean, various phones are better than other things. I don't know if you're on a landline or a cell phone or what, but I know no matter what kind of cell phone you've got, periodically you're just going to get dropped.
I would never call you on my cell phone because my cell phone completely sucks.
Oh, okay.
And I did promise my sister that I would text her every day from Haiti, but I didn't realize I needed a SIM card in order to do that.
Oh, absolutely, and you need international service as well.
Yeah, well,
yeah.
I'm not that savvy. I know now.
Well, I'm surprised that infrastructure still exists down there.
Well, actually, I was able to call. I could call anyone I wanted in Miami, but I couldn't, not from my phone. They had phones set up through UM so that you could call anywhere in Miami, but you couldn't call. My sister lives in South Dakota, so I couldn't call her. So I called my uncle and told him to email the family that I actually made it, all is well. You know, I mean.
Were you down there at the time that the fundamentalists were, you know, kidnapping 33 kids?
I went there just after, and it was really creepy when an orphanage came through and was like, we'll take him, we'll take her, we'll take, and I'm like, wow. So this is Target.
Jeez. Oh,
I mean, it was
really
creepy. And my patient, I ended up needing a Dr. Phil consult because it was very unclear as to his situation because the other family kind of adopted him.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't want to give him up to the orphanage if he had family, you know, hello. But I think that they just were hanging out with them because then, you know, after 2 days of trying to figure it out, it seems like they were just friends with him, and they were asked if they wanted to take him, and they said no. And apparently his aunt lives in Port-au-Prince, and his mother lives across the mountains, and he wanted to raise money to get to his mother. And, I mean, everything is just so sad, you know. One of the interpreters wanted me to take his kids. I'm like,
oh.
How am I going to, can they fit in my backpack? I don't think so. How am I going
to
do
and,
that?
And you said welcome to Target. My God, it does. It almost sounds like retail.
It's gross. I mean, these Christians.
Because there aren't any Christians showing up down there to take adults, are they?
Mm-mm.
No. Didn't think so. But, you know, they can take the children and brainwash them before the voodoo does. You know how it goes. Oh, that's just hard. And you were working on children.
You know, there was a really incredible scene. A pastor, a Haitian pastor came in, and the whole hospital burst into song. And it was like, you could tell, I had no idea what they were saying. I know it was religious, and I normally... I'm very anti-religious anything, but this song was so beautiful, and it just gave me chills, and everyone was up singing. I mean, it was incredible.
Wow.
They had an exterminator going through, exterminating in between, you know, I was breathing that in, and, you know, I mean, I'm sure it was some sort of Monsanto chemical.
Yeah, with long-lasting, mind-altering effects. Well, Janie, I'm so glad. You know, this has just been an astonishing conversation, and I'm so glad that you chose to share it with us. It is the first contact we've had with anybody who's been on the ground there. And I just speaking on behalf of the entire Horn audience and family that we have become, thank you for doing what you've done. I'm sure you don't need it, but thank you all the same because you're walking the walk and talking the talk.
No, it was an incredible experience. I would do it again in a heartbeat. You know, I mean, there's no sense of entitlement. They appreciate what you do. You know, I mean, it was very rewarding. It was very sad and taxing, but it was a very rewarding experience.
It had to have been, and it will be one that will last you your lifetime. And like I said, I imagine it got to sort of remind you why you're in the profession in the first place.
Absolutely.
Janie, take care, dear, and be well, and I hope we hear from you soon.
Okay.
All right.
Take care, Bob.
Bye
Thank
now.
You. Bye-bye.
Janie calling from South Florida. Wow. That's one of those moments, that's one of those why the horn exists moments, isn't it? Tell me where you're going to hear that anywhere else. You know, it's why I take hat in hand and say, you know, please, can you help us keep going? Because we're able to get out stories like Janie's. And like the conversations we have on any given night. So, you know, it's just a gentle reminder, I suppose. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Hey, Sandra.
Hey. Yeah, after that Super Bowl, that was great.
Oh, I enjoyed the heck out of it, start to finish. Got to worry a little bit, then got to feel better.
Yeah, well, no, I was sort of, you know, I wasn't too sure. I mean, it's not like the Saints came out flat or anything, but, you know, you just don't know. What that Manning, but they handled his ass down, considering who it is, you know?
Yeah, no kidding.
I mean, and when they did that, I think they sucked the air right out of the place. That offside kick was crazy.
Oh, that was exquisite.
They were like, oh, no, we need to keep the ball out of this fool's hand. You know what I mean?
Right.
First time
all season, no Colts points at all in the fourth quarter?
Yeah, no, they did.
And they sacked him. You know, did he ever get sacked? I don't think so.
No, he didn't. And the thing is, they obviously, you know, looked at what they needed to do. I mean, really, really interesting play calling, you know?
Drew Brees completed 32 of 39, and no plays longer than 24 yards. Small ball, you know? That's what it was a small ball.
It was all short, but it worked out excellent. And that Pierre Thomas, that fool, my God. I mean, he's an amazing runner. He is so huge.
Oh, he's a monster.
Yeah, I mean, just thinking about some of his runs, and I was like, hello. I mean, it really was an amazing. I've never seen, he's so big.
And, well, I mean, the thing just had circles within circles within circles, because if what I read is correct, then the guy who returned the interception for the touchdown went to Indiana for college.
That's right, Porter, yeah.
But is one of only four members of the Saints who are actually from Louisiana.
Right. No. I mean, it's also, the narratives are great for this.
That film footage, and it's precious. That film footage of a very young back then Archie Manning, Saints quarterback, standing there with little three-year-old Peyton, and are you going to be a football player? Yes, I am. It was charming as heck. And then to follow that with that closing footage of Drew Brees holding his precious little not-quite-year-old son with his headphones on his ears to protect his ears from the noise. What a perfect, seamless circle.
Oh, no, that was just so nice, that scene. You know, it really sort of, you know, ended the story. Just because it just made it so nice because, you know, with the whole T-ball, all that stuff was so nasty. And so it was just wonderful that the game overshadowed all of it. It was so good, which I was grateful for, you know. And the DVR, thank you very much. I didn't even see that damn commercial. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, it's all over the Internet, too. You don't even have to worry about that.
No, I know. But I just was sort of, you know, just determined not to. In fact, the commercials were a bit, I mean, they were okay, but I don't know.
Like I said, I thought the best of the lot was the Betty White Snickers commercial.
Yeah, no, that was good. And I have to say, because I'm so pedestrian sometimes, I found that Flow TV, when that man was following that couple shopping, that one killed me. Because when he said lavender, how about lavender? And that guy said, how about not?
How about not?
I was like, shut up. But see, I love those sort of women against men battles.
The one that I thought had the most subtext was the fiddle-playing beaver.
Oh, yeah.
Because, go back and watch it again. That thing has sexual subtext all day long.
Yeah, no, you know, I will look at some of them again. I shouldn't be surprised, but the game was just outstanding. Wow.
Not a dull moment to it. I mean, I sat there, and, you know, I get kind of iffy about pro football, and I'm downright cynical about the Super Bowl because it's got, or you know, like the football, college football championship, because it's, you know, we'll be back with more commercials right after this football.
Yeah, no, and it was just,
but
it's excruciating.
But you know, one thing that I thought was borne out, you know, there were a couple of drop passes in the first half on both sides, and There's a little known trivial fact that I don't think has been changed, or I didn't read if it has, but for years and years and years, because it is such a humongous PR draw, you know how, like if you write to your congressman, you can get a flag that's flown over the Capitol for X number of dollars, and they've got a guy on the top of the Capitol who just sits there and runs flags up and runs them down and runs them up and runs them down, box them and ship them.
Oh, okay.
Well, there's sort of the same thing that goes on at the Super Bowl, Sandra, and that is every play is a new ball. And they do that all during either the first quarter or the first half. And if you've ever handled a brand new ball in the sporting goods store, those things are slicker than owl snot.
Yeah, but I heard that they broke all of them in beforehand because of that reason.
But well, maybe they do. Maybe that accounts for a better game.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying because I heard about that. But then I heard that they have these people breaking these balls in. That was some sort of strategy. I mean, maybe it's the wrong story, but I do know what you mean because any kind of new ball is very difficult to manage. But they had a couple of drop balls. That I thought maybe that was more nervousness, though.
And I got to tell you, Lee in Tennessee sent this along to me, and just this great question. God, this just laid me low when I read it earlier. Most surprising movie resemblance. Did anyone else's Super Bowl party become obsessed with repeated shots of Peyton Manning in which he was working a surprising crazy face and looked exactly? Excuse me. Yeah, see, it did it again. Was working a surprising crazy face and looked exactly like Vincent D'Onofrio in Full Metal Jacket. Because they kept cutting to him, and he looked like he was ready to head for the bell tower with the rifle.
No. He definitely wasn't happy at all. But then again, you know, his legacy was being snatched from him. I don't care. I thought that Drew Brees, you know, more power to him. His story is a great story too, you know.
Oh, and you know they did that, and I gotta say that outside of the Pam Tebow hype and all of that crap, all the human interest stuff was as good as it's ever been done.
Oh, that's what I mean. That's why it, at the end of the day, I know I was moaning about it, you know, with the whole thing. It really became so secondary. You know, I was grateful for it, and I'm trying to just avoid it because it's so nauseating. Listen, I know you have to go, but the only other thing I wanted to mention was, are you kidding me with this, this horrible Ben Nelson? Now he's going to filibuster a labor nominee?
Oh, God.
I mean, I know it's a bit esoteric, but it's just kind of like, you know, shoot me now. I was just like.
You do not have to take me home and shoot me later. You can shoot me now.
Right. There's no end to these people. You know, he's talking about, well, it goes against our right to work state. You know, and it's just, they say it so proudly as if exploiting people.
But that's a damn lie. You know, it doesn't go against right to work. There's lots of right to work states, and no federal labor official has the right to overturn that. But the federal labor official does have the right to enforce federal law.
No, but it's just the whole ideology and celebration of that crap, which I'm so sick to death of. I mean, you had mentioned earlier the four things that were passed that sort of sucked the life out of, you know, working folks. And I just want to add Volcker, who is now in this fake progressive position. He also sucked the life out of the working people in this country by raising interest rates to destroy the industrial policy of this country, you know?
And it worked.
And these people are back under new guise, and I just have to shake my head. You know, it's like, listen, give me an effing break.
Oh, yeah, and then you take most favored trading partner status with China and make it permanent. Add in a soupçon of World Trade Organization and the interest rates in Volcker, like you mentioned, and hey, oh, damn, where'd all the industry go?
No, and then you're going to hear Obama talking about we need to increase exports. How's that going to happen without an industrial policy? I'm sorry.
Hey, we can export washing machines. Wait, we don't make washing machines anymore.
What it is a piece of BS that they're just selling us a bill of goods. Anyway, one other thing is, and this is also out there, but have you seen what's going on in Europe? Now they're trying to force them countries, you know, trying to suck the demand out of those countries.
Yeah.
And that's really interesting because are they going to let the EU just fall apart? Interesting to see.
I can't imagine that the EU nations will do that, but it...
Well, no, but these sovereign nations don't have to bend to bondholders. You understand what I'm saying?
So that's right.
I don't know what kind of... You know, they're going to make their people riot. Greece is already rioting, right?
Yeah, they are. Yeah.
And Spain and Portugal, I mean, them governments will fall because they want to subject those people to misery. you know, all because they want to make these bondholders whole? I don't know, Bob.
I mean, I know bonds are supposed to be really rock-solid investments, but is there anything out there that says bonds are absolutely inviolable?
No, only the imaginary ideology and dogma that we subject ourselves to. Think Argentina. They said toodles. That was a bit hairy for a minute, but I see the lenders are back there now. See what I'm saying?
It would appear, yeah.
No, sovereign nations are the last word, but, you know, they got people so hamstrung. And the EU, screw them. Them countries can say we're leaving. Watch how fast they bail them out. But we'll see if they have the political will, you know?
And, you know, with countries like France, God bless the working class French, because they're not prone to tolerate just a whole lot of BS.
No, and the Greeks aren't either, from the looks of it. Anyway, I'll let you go. I know you're at the end of your show, and I guess I'll call when I call.
All right, Sandra, we'll be looking for you.
All right, bye.
Bye now. And that does bring us to the end of the program. Seriously, we are in our usual deep hole. February is 8 days old, which means we're a week old, which means we should have, about $500 in the kitty from what has, we don't, if we're going to go week to week as opposed to just the $2,000 we try to raise monthly. God, we could use some help. Sure would be nice. Please hit the PayPal button if you're able. Or use the snail mail address that's also on the Contribute tab at headonradionetwork.com. Either way is fine. Either way is just fine. Thanks to everybody. Thanks to Janie for that stirring account of 4 days in her life. And thanks to everybody that just made this a wonderful show. Sorry about the stuff we didn't get to. But you know what? You know what's really cool? We've got tomorrow, and we'll stay busy without a doubt. Thanks to Sue and Lottie. Moderators in the chat room, thanks to our blogger, Texas Betsy. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks to John Fox. Happy birthday, brother. Thanks to Peter Godbold and Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ColeRiverWind.org. And always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you.
Conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Begins anew. You are a wonderful you. And, you know, let's just get this done real quick. I don't think I have ever enjoyed a Super Bowl so much in my entire life as I enjoyed that one last night. It just had everything, and including the little emotional roller coaster ride early in the game where you were thinking, I don't know if the Saints can do this. That's right. I had a dark night of the soul. I lost faith. Well, me, lose faith. Yeah. But it was glorious. It was glorious. And when Peyton Manning threw that ball straight into young Mr. Porter's arms and he took it to the house, that was some sweet football. And so congratulations to all the Saints fans, and congratulations to the city of New Orleans that isn't really back, but got to feel for a little bit like it was, and maybe saw a vision of what can be. It was a great game to watch. Now, that having been said, somewhere down into the program, and I know you are sick to death of it, but somewhere in the program, now that the stupid focus on your family thing has run, I think that it would be appropriate, not about the message, not about the fact that they're anti-womb weirdos or anti-woman weirdos or anything like that, but I think it would be appropriate somewhere in the program to have a brief discussion of sorts, of some duration, of just what it means, the content of Pam Tebow's story, because you didn't get it. That whole stupid ad that went by, and I believe it was our buddy Lee from Austin. Let me see. Yeah, here it is. Hey, Bob, not to rub it in, but I had a really nice Super Bowl. I ate crawfish pie till I was about to bust at the seams, along with red beans and rice with andouille and jambalaya. Smoked some Nat Sherman's while drinking Stone IPAs and had a few wonderful shots of some really fine the single malt 18-year-old scotch that I will not, even though I am of Scots heritage, will not try to pronounce. Bruichladdich. I think it's pronounced Four Roses. There was also the buttermilk-soaked chicken wangs and scratch-made blue cheese dip that made the tongue explode. And, yeah, the game was okay, too. Lee says, I got lucky and the sound was down, and this is what I was getting to. I got lucky and the sound was down when the Tebow commercial was on. Since I hadn't seen his mom before, all I could think was, wow, Mary Steenburgen looks really old. Perfect. Just perfectly. Sorry, Focus on the Family, Lee says. You were not able to wreck my game. The boost shuffling crew with Iron Mike came closer to doing that. Or the boot shuffling crew with Iron Mike came closer to doing that than you jerks did. Then after the game, when the hugging and crying was done, I started looking at photos from, he says, Marion's husband's photos from his last road trip. He plays with Ivan Neville, which included a couple of nights in New Orleans. And guess what? Wait for it. Of course, the neighborhood they lived in hasn't been rebuilt. Looks like the place got hit last week. Oh, well, my friends, since I had no dog in the fight, I'm happy for you. I really am. But I'm dismayed to think that this win rights the wrongs that have been dumped on that part of the country. And, of course, it doesn't. Like I said, though, perhaps it's a vision. Perhaps it is at least a vision of a shared vision. A vision of a vision. Really, that's what I mean to say. But that's the truth. Mrs. Tebow looks like an old actress that, you know, the cocaine nights kind of finally caught up with. But anyway, I think somewhere down in the program it would probably be okay for us to examine her story, because I did over the weekend, and it is so full of holes. God, a Swiss cheese has more structural integrity than Mrs. Tebow's story. She's been diagnosed with two or three things by now, And this is why I kept begging all last week, won't someone please do some basic journalistic inquiry into Mrs. Tebow's story? And I finally saw a story with a byline on it earlier today, sort of a post-focus wrap-up of the really lame-ass ad. And it was. It was really lame. So naturally it's being hailed as earth-shattering and trend-setting by the We Hate Women's Insides movement.